Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show improve. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
We're going to return now to our series on pivotal events from 1968 and a violent confrontation that happened on this day. It set events in motion that led to the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. in Memphis, Tennessee. Collecting trash is a dirty and often thankless job, and back in 1968, sanitation workers in Memphis had such dangerous working conditions that two men were killed on the job. African-American workers went on strike. King came to Memphis to support their cause. As the city prepares to mark 50 years since his assassination, NPR's Debbie Elliott revisits the sanitation worker strike.
It's dark at the barn, really a giant parking lot full of garbage trucks. Driver Elmore Nickelberry walks around his truck, testing the equipment before heading out on the night shift.
I'm ready to go.
Nickelberry is 86 and has been working for the Memphis Sanitation Department since he was 21. Today, he's a driver with a crew of two, and his truck is equipped to lift and dump trash bins. Back in the 50s and 60s, he did the lifting and dumping.
When I first started, it was rough. I had to tow tubs on my head, on my shoulder, under my arms.
He rode on the back of the truck, jumping off to go into people's backyards to pick up garbage. It was a filthy job.
I mean, you put it on your head, all that stuff ran down your shoulder.
But the city didn't let African-American workers shower at the barn. That was reserved for the white drivers. And there was no place for them to take shelter in the rain. In early 1968, trash collectors Echo Cole and Robert Walker climbed into the back of a truck to escape a storm and were accidentally crushed to death by its compactor. In response, workers organized to demand better working conditions and higher pay. Nickelberry says they got no respect.
Most of the time they would call us boys. We'd get on the bus, they were looking at old garbage man. And I know I wasn't old garbage man, I just work in garbage.
The city rejected the workers' demands and refused to recognize their union. They walked off the job and marched downtown every morning wearing sandwich boards and carrying placards that declared, "I am a man." The strike was supported by local clergy active in the civil rights movement.
I'm James Morris Lawson, Jr. I am a retired United Methodist pastor.
James Lawson, now 89 and living in Los Angeles, was pastor of Centenary Methodist Church in Memphis in 1968. He helped map strategy for the sanitation workers' strike and spoke out against the city's leadership back then.
When a public official orders a group of men to get back to work and then we'll talk, and treats them as though they are not men, that's a racist point of view. For at the heart of racism is the idea that a man is not a man.
I use some of the movement language that you were men, you're a child of God, you are somebody. Segregation tries to pretend that you're not a human being, you're not a man, but you have to fight that as you are now engaged in this struggle. You yourselves must claim your humanity before God.
Lawson had studied Gandhi's nonviolent methods as a missionary in India and had come south at the urging of Martin Luther King.
The climate in Memphis was that of a pretty fierce racism.
There were no black supervisors at the sanitation department, and wages were so meager many of the workers used food stamps to eat. They called the public works barn the plantation. King was focused on building a poor people's campaign at the time, and Lawson says the sanitation workers' plight was a natural fit. The strike was languishing, so to help galvanize support in the broader black community, Lawson invited King to come speak.
And so when I called him, King immediately said, of course, yes.
That's me and him on his last march.
Fred Davis is looking at a photograph taken on March 28, 1968. Davis, one of the city's first African-American city councilmen at the time, is marching alongside King with a crowd following behind. As the march rounded a corner, he says, a group of young men broke away.
They started throwing bricks in the windows of the businesses and taking sticks and breaking the windows out, and then all hell broke loose, and the police moved in with tear gas and nightsticks. Two of us councilmen were accosted by police, and we tried to explain to them we were members of the city council, and they replied they didn't give a damn.
The march was turned back, and organizers took Dr. King to safety, fearing he would be targeted. Police killed a 16-year-old suspected of looting. Dozens of people were injured and more than 250 arrested.
It came apart, and Dr. King was very disappointed.
By nightfall, armored tanks rolled into town with some 3,800 National Guard troops, and the city imposed a curfew. Mayor Henry Loeb.
When the march degenerated into a riot, abandoned by its leaders, the police, with my full sanction, took the necessary action to restore law and order.
King joined organizers for a news conference that evening to say the marches would continue.
Since the unfortunate developments today took place, I'll probably have to stay longer than I originally planned, but I don't.
King had come to Memphis at a time when race riots were breaking out in cities across the country, so to have violence here was a major setback, historian Taylor Branch.
He feared that the press would say that nonviolence was dead. That's why he was so determined to come back to Memphis.
He returned in early April.
So he got shot right up there.
Sanitation worker Elmore Nickelberry's downtown trash route takes him by the Lorraine Motel, where King was killed on April 4th.
You can see why he stood up on the balcony right there.
Nickelberry says he'll never forget what King did.
A man coming to Memphis, Martin Luther coming to Memphis to help the sanitation department. And then the man get killed. I don't like to talk about it. You feel mighty bad. A man come help you, and then he come kill you. That's bad. That's bad.
After King's assassination, the city settled with striking workers and recognized their union. They got showers, uniforms, higher wages, and African-American supervisors. Today, that same union, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, is still advocating for Memphis sanitation workers.
Repeat after me. I am. Amen.
They were part of a Working People's Day of Action recently at Claiborne Temple, the historic building where sanitation workers organized in 68. Mari Spivey is the union chapter chairperson for Memphis Sanitation Workers.
The issues today are safe working conditions and those critical four words that we spoke 50 years ago. I am a man.
Spivey says, among other things, they're seeking air conditioning for the garbage trucks, a pay raise, and benefits for temporary employees. 75-year-old sanitation worker Cleophas Smith is one of the original strikers. He says they just want pay and benefits more in line with other city employees.
I make about $18 an hour. That's all I've been making for the past 9 years.
Activists say the issue of economic justice that King was pursuing remains relevant in Memphis, a majority black city where the poverty rate for African Americans is double that of the white population. P. Moses, a Memphis organizer with Black Lives Matter, says the movement shares common ground with I Am a Man.
One is a cry and the other is an outcry.
Moses says both attempt to acknowledge a shared humanity regardless of race or gender.
The phrase I am a man signifies dignity. It was, I want to be treated like a man. A lot of times people think that I'm just a Black Lives Matter activist, but actually I'm a human rights advocate. And when I say I am a man, I am saying that I am somebody. Please treat me accordingly.
She says Black citizens are still trying to be treated with dignity.
We're not just being treated unfairly on the job. We're being treated unfairly at school. We're being treated unfairly when we're accused of something. We're being treated unfairly when we're considered for a job. We're being treated unfairly when we walk down the street.
What's different today is that Memphis leaders acknowledge that the city was on the wrong side of history in 1968.
I think it's important that we celebrate the legacy of those that fought for people like me to be here today as the police director.
The city's top law enforcement officer, Michael Rawlings, is African American, but still grapples with long-standing issues of trust.
Communities of color often feel as though law enforcement is not supporting their communities and their goals. You know, we try to work hard to build relationships with our community, but it's an everyday struggle.
Rawlings says it's those same communities that have high rates of violence and miserable education outcomes. Memphis Mayor Jim Strickland says the city is prepared for the scrutiny that will come as the nation commemorates 50 years since King's assassination here. It's a better place, he says, but with work to be done.
I love Memphis. I'm so optimistic about our future, but I don't want to act like I'm ignorant of our challenges. Violent crime is way too high. Poverty is way too high. Too few kids are getting properly educated.
Last year, the city maneuvered around Tennessee law to have Confederate statues removed from public parks. And it paid the 1968 sanitation workers a lump sum of $70,000 each because they'd never been eligible for a city pension.
We have momentum to address the vestiges of racism and what racism has left us, which is an unfair system.
Back on the night shift, 86-year-old Elmore Nickelberry says the city payment has him planning for retirement.
I'm hanging up my hat. I'm going to California for the Bermuda shows. I'm running my feet through the sand to see what's going on.
After 64 years of cleaning up the city, he'll retire at the end of April.
You have a good night now.
Debbie Elliott, NPR News, Memphis.
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Thursday, March 29th, 2018. So I have been told. This is our weekly broadcast on neutralizing workplace racism. If we have any non-white listeners who have figured out codification, things that work, get whites to back off of you on the job. You are not accused of, oh, you were 30 seconds late, got to let you go or give you some sort of write-up. That doesn't happen to you. You don't get accused of being aloof, not a team player. Not a part of our family. You don't get any of those accusations. You don't get in trouble if you don't show up for lunch or whatever the case is. You get all your sick days, time off, personal days, no problem. If you have figured out how to do that, you get your raises, you got your nice office, think you're going to be chilling until you're ready to retire, you should be the first person to dial in and let us know how you were able to accomplish that with lots of details, please. 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Certainly, if you are having any difficulties, problems, certainly dial in. We can offer counter racist suggestions, perspective on what's happening and how you might proceed in dealing with things. We are all still learning. I think this is a great opportunity to learn about racism, white supremacy, and not just to complain or be sad and mope about being terrorized on the job, but to really practice codification successfully so that we can solve problems without creating new problems. That said, a couple things I wanted to say before we get started. I cannot believe that segment that we just heard on the late Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. days before the 50, I will not say anniversary. Dr. Cambon, I think, made a great point about that term anniversary with being associated with Black death. But 50 years since the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in Memphis, Tennessee, coming up on 50 years since that assassination. I was not going to play that for workplace racism. I was going to save that and play it for the compensatory call-in this weekend. But the more I thought about it, Dr. King died, was assassinated, his final campaign fighting against workplace racism, helping these Black sanitation workers. I just thought there was no way to pass that up not have that included in workplace racism, just because I think that it's such an important issue. It seems you've got some of the same Black people that 50 years ago were saying, "I am a man," are still saying the same thing now, 2018, which, is exhausting, is sad, pitiful. A lot of different adjectives could be used, but it seems that is. And again, hopefully we can get this problem solved immediately. But a couple things that I wanted to say about the significance of what came across in that segment. So many things. I am a man. I don't think Bill Gates or, whites have to run around saying, "I am a woman. I am a man." The fact that you have to keep saying that for 50 years and putting it on big signs suggests some doubt. Boys and girls in the system of racism, white supremacy. The term accidentally, and they even said garbage men, they would call them garbage men, not sanitation workers, and they would call them garbage men, like you're trash. The term accident, when they referred to the two Black workers, victims of white supremacy, who took shelter in these garbage trucks and were killed. They said they were accidentally killed. And when I heard that word accident, it set off an alert in my mind. I just want to take a couple of seconds, if that is all right, please. 9 years of the cows. If folks recall, way back in 2014, Dr. Tommy Curry was on the program. This was the summer when Michael Brown Jr. and Eric Garner were killed. And so all of that activity, speaking of Black Lives Matter, all of that activity was happening summer of 2014. There was an article written by Zach Stafford, non-white male, does have a white parent, ding, ding. The article is titled, "I'm Black, My Brother's White, and He's a Cop Who Shot a Black Man on Duty." I'm not going to read the whole thing, but just the word accident. This is what I thought of when they talked about the sanitation workers, Black sanitation workers who were accidentally killed. So this guy, he's talking about his white brother who shot a Black male. So he says, "The first thing I did after I got the phone call was Google my brother's name. I saw a mix of headlines. Some outlets were more sympathetic toward the unarmed 22-year-old victim, while other coverage was more favorable to my brother, the cop who accidentally killed someone. Articles kept using that word, accidental, over and over, and it felt like aloe on a burn." Watching the first press conference later that day, the police spokesman talked about how my brother was just doing his job, that he followed protocol, and that this was just a tragic accident for everyone involved. After the press conference, one of the local news stations in Nashville aired a more in-depth look at the case and reported that the victim had a family member who had also been shot by someone on the same police force years earlier, also apparently by accident. Accident seemed like an odd word to me for this situation. When I hear the word accident, I usually think about spilled milk or the dog urinating on the carpet or even bumper scratch. Accidents were things that you respond to with, whoops, sorry. But with this accident, I wondered, to whom could we even say sorry now that a man lay dead? While I watched, I kept thinking about why these accidents always seem to happen to black people and why they were called accidents when it seemed so clearly to be much more than an accident, when it seemed to be a flaw in a system that called things accidents. I stared at my computer after my screen went blank and prayed that it was an accident, because calling it that didn't make me feel I had to choose my race over my blood, the strangers who asked me questions over the brother who wanted them to. And I'll stop there. The article goes on into more detail, but just that portion right there about the use of the word accident in relation to black death, I thought brilliantly written. Again, Mr. Zach Stafford, the article, "I'm Black, My Brother's White, and He's a Cop Who Shot a Black Man on Duty." Just pay attention to how often and how many different contexts with regards to black people dying the word accident gets invoked. Anyway, continuing with the piece on Dr. King and the sanitation workers, they talked about that quote-unquote riot in Memphis that disrupted the peaceful protest. The late Dick Gregory, two-time guest on The Context of White Supremacy, 9 years of the Cows. Dick Gregory talked about and wrote about in Murder in Memphis. He and Mark Lane wrote Murder in Memphis, which is about the assassination of Dr. King. They talk about that. And Dick Gregory said, as did others, that the disruption that happened, that was a part of the COINTELPRO operation, counterintelligence program, that was directly targeted at neutralizing black people, primarily Dr. King and Minister Malcolm X, two of their main targets, and even killing black people. A lot of evidence that they were involved in planning that assassination. That's what the book Murder in Memphis is about. But they talk about how they paid and ordered individuals, some of them black, to go and be rowdy and disruptive to discredit Dr. King and to discredit that march. I'm pretty sure the folks at NPR, if ignorant, retarded victim Gus T. Renegade is aware of this book and this information, I'm pretty sure NPR could have done a little digging to get the, that tidbit and included that as well, because I think that's super important. And they have covered COINTELPRO before. Also thought, the word fair, specifically unfair. Now, VGQ, I think it was a non-white person who was talking about how, quote unquote, unfairly the non-white people in Tennessee are being treated. Just the importance of words, and certainly on the job. We do not want to be saying on the job, you know, I'm being reprimanded for coming in 5 minutes late and you're not treating me fairly. I've seen others come in late, and they're not subject to the same write-ups. It just seems like there's unequal enforcement of policy. You do not want to be saying fair. We want to use correct terms. I'm being treated incorrectly, unjustly. I'm being mistreated, or even better, as Mr. Fuller would recommend, someone is subverting the company. The company is being sabotaged because I'm a part of the company, and what's happening is a violation of company policy. Even better. But yet not, I'm not being treated fairly. And it was said just over and over and over. And again, the logic, Mr. Fuller explains it in the word guide, but just briefly, it's associating correct treatment with whiteness. Fair, white, associating correct treatment. You're not treating me fairly. You're not treating me like a white person, as though white people are the only ones qualified for correct, just treatment. Mr. Fuller has much more elaborate detail on that in the word guide. Finally, vestiges. I think it was a racist suspect towards the end of the clip who said that we were left with the vestiges of racism. That right there, I suspect, is a deliberate act of racism, white supremacy, because they know that whites are still doing many of the exact same things that they were doing in 1968 to expand and refine white supremacy racism. That's why you've got black people in many of the same predicaments that they were in 1968, still saying, "I am a man." Question mark. Also, and just quick last thought on all of that, man, I thought it was kind of tragic, not as tragic as us having not solved this problem, but still pretty tragic that you have a black male working, apparently not, you know, too good of a job, where you're still having to go and protest and what have you for correct wages and correct treatment on the job. At 75, you're still having to do that? Like, I mean, I know some people, they want to work, they want to stay active, but wow, I am not sure I would want to do that. And for 50 years, that's a long time. Like, I would think I would want to go ahead and retire, prop my feet up, enjoy, you know, what Memphis has to offer, you know, grow some cucumbers. I don't, anything other than doing sanitation work. And I guess my extra last commentary, I think I said this when that dreadful film Fences came out about racism and black sanitation workers, were pretty much the black sanitation worker Troy was the villain. I said then they had three black people working the garbage truck. I said pretty soon it's going to be zero. I think he probably is doing well to get out now, because that number is probably going to be zero sooner than we think, where it'll be completely automated, driverless sanitation trucks going around and doing all of the dumping. Now, moving to workplace racism, if you are not able to call in, you can drop an email, untiljustice@gmail.com. untiljustice@gmail.com. Feel free to write and we can read your commentary, or if you are having a problem or what have you, or if you have figured out some things that work, definitely drop an email and we will read it on the air. Again, just want to remind and encourage folks, this is not a spectator broadcast. There are many other options on a Thursday evening if you just want to be entertained. This is a broadcast where folks are about sharing suggestions on ways that we can solve problems without creating new problems on the job. Certainly, if you're having problems, you should participate. Don't feel nervous. We're just victims, just still learning, really, and hopefully trying to share constructive ideas, recommendations, strategies. So feel free to chime in. I think a lot of us have work histories. I think a lot of us have had problems on the job. If you have not, then you certainly should call in to share how you've pulled that off. We do have younger listeners who I think definitely appreciate and benefit from hearing from folks who may have a slightly longer work history with more experience about things that they might want to look out for. I think that can be helpful to all of us to recognize some of the patterns and potential ways that whites typically practice racism against black people in the workplace. That said, a person wrote in already with their commentary. This is a black female. I have class with an older black male who is trying to transition careers. The non-black students surround him and are constantly playing and cracking jokes with him. The non-black students are much younger, to add. I witnessed one incident where a non-black student stuck gum to his shirt and made a mockery in front of the class. This older black male got angry and stormed out. The white professor even made a joke about it. During class break, I went to speak with the black male, told him the non-black students are not his friends, don't respect him, and only see him as a form of entertainment for the time being. I asked him why they can all hook each other up with jobs but can't help you. He didn't have an answer. I asked him that non-black people will never come together to help him. This older black male from the start of the semester would ask these non-black students if anyone was hiring or how did you get into the field, and every single time he was met with the silent treatment. But once this man made jokes, they had so much to say to him. I told this black male to be very observant about how they are, and I think he listened to me. After class break and everyone settled down, he asked very loudly if anyone was hiring in the field we are pursuing. No one answered him. He then made a joke and they, the non-blacks, started talking to him again. This black male then said, "I see what you mean," in French to me. I nodded in agreement and hoped the info I gave him sticks with him. Well, black self-respect. I'm doing my applause in the background. Black self-respect. I've said for years, you know, we have people, I think Roz and quite a few others, Emmy, I think, talked about it recently, who have taken the position. If I am on the job, if I build up a rapport with other black people and I see a problem or something arises where I can offer a suggestion or I have constructive information that may aid a black person, I'm going to do that. I know you have other folks, Thomas in New York and others who've taken the position. Hey, I'm going to be a bit more conservative on the job. When I say conservative in this context, meaning I'm going to be a bit more suspicious that just because an individual has a lot of melanin doesn't necessarily mean that they have my best interest at heart. Racist man, racist woman, they are able to manipulate non-white people, all of us, and frequently on jobs, it's very easy for them to manipulate and use other victims of racism, white supremacy to harm non-white people. So I know some folks take the position, hey, I am not going to do a lot of reaching out, helping out, talking about racism or things of that nature. I understand both positions, but I do definitely respect, acknowledge, commend folks who take, you know, an opportunity to exercise some black self-respect. And this sort of thing plays out all the time, exactly what she's talking about, even though this is a classroom situation. Same thing, workplace environment where black people are supposed to be the entertainment committee. I think that's the way Mr. Fuller phrases it. And that's why I recommend on the program we talk about being serious. I think someone just asked me for my definition about being serious recently. Just being serious on the job. You know, we're not here to participate in a whole lot of corny joking around, and I'm not here with the joke of the day. And I mean, that's participating in that sort of tomfoolery with race soldiers. This is what happens, where I think she wrote about them sticking gum on this black male. I think retired firefighter in Florida has talked about it. Black people playing around in these shenanigans and ended up having a penis placed on them, joking around. And then what they'll say is, hey, we like to have fun. We always horse around on the job. You know, we always have fun. We participated before. You were laughing and joking. We were just having a good time, man. Why are you taking it so serious? No, we're going to be serious from the very beginning. I'm not participating in any of that. No nicknames, no jokes. And even that means I'm not even going to laugh. If they're doing this behavior or talking about this sort of nonsense with others, I'm not even going to laugh then. I'm going to be serious. And this victim that she talked about, when he was talking serious and trying to advance his career, crickets. They got nothing to say. That's fine. We can live with that. No problem. We'll all just sit here in silence, be quiet, and get our work done. No problem. But we're not going to just sit here and clown around for you to have fun practicing white supremacy. No, no way. Be serious. And just that way that you carry yourself, that sends a message. That right there can be very helpful in at least minimizing to some degree the amount of abuse that you are going to be facing from these racists when they see that you're conducting yourself serious. You're not here to just be an easy victim for them. I'll hush there. Number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. If you have your own situation, or certainly if you have suggestions, if you figured out some things that work, you should be one of the first people to dial in. But if you have your own situation, problem that you want to address, feel free to dial in. Folks who have a hand up, line should be open.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Hi, yes. Greetings to everyone. Just wanted to
run down a few scenarios that happened at work that were kind of racist related, I believe. Real quick, one was IT department was looking to include some hardware to our computers, and my department had already been using some hardware, and I found that I was using it at a much cheaper price when they were getting ready to roll it out and distribute to all the employees. But once I made it aware to the IT department head, you know, he wanted to come test it out, come check out what I was talking about. And once he saw that it worked, he's like, "Well, wow, this saves us a whole lot of money." Long story short, with that scenario, he was to give an overview during one of the company meetings and showed everyone, here's what's coming down, here's this new piece of equipment we're going to be using, and it's going to save us a whole lot of money. And that was it. Moved on and, you know, was kind of patting himself on the back about how great of a saving this was and how great of a find this was. Didn't give any credit to me at all. And I'm sitting there saying, "Oh my goodness, I don't believe what just happened." You know, I mean, in the tune of like good $5,000-$6,000 savings because of what I introduced or made them aware of. Next scenario, the same manager, we were at a luncheon, and the same manager was sitting next to me with other managers and other direct reports. It was a luncheon around the holiday season there. And we got on the subject of talking about football, and I was involved in that conversation. And then it quickly shifted, and he looked at me and says, "Well, you're a big basketball fan. Who's your favorite team?" And it kind of caught me off guard at first because I'm like, wait a minute. I'm thinking in my mind, I never discussed basketball with you. I never had any conversations around you about basketball. And, of course, I'm the only black one sitting there, right? But it just kind of struck me odd that, you know, "Oh, yeah, you're a big basketball fan." "Well, wait a minute. How do you know I'm a basketball fan? We never talked about that." I've been saying this to myself in my mind. But then, you know, I just kind of went ahead with the conversation and continue on, and then thought on it after the fact, like, wait a minute, why would he think that I'm a big basketball fan? Okay. Another scenario kind of relating to sports. Just recently, we had a luncheon type event that was and kind of going along with the NCAA tournament. So they had sandwiches and all in the cafeteria. We're all sitting at different tables and all. And one of the guys looks at me, with coworkers, says, you know, well, first we were talking about who's going to win and all. And I said, I don't know who's going to win. I don't really follow basketball. And then he looks at me, again, I'm the only black sitting there. "Quinn, who do you think's going to win? You know, you follow this stuff." And again, kind of catch me kind of off guard. You know, I just went on and said who I thought was going to win and so on. And then during that same conversation, one of the other guys speaks up and says, "I think the school Puerto Rico Pharmaceutical is going to win." And they're all kind of looking around. I said, "I don't know. It sounds like a good name, you know." And then the other white person speaks up and says, "Oh, yeah, they got a good 7-footer on their team." And they're, you know, kind of looking at him like, are you serious? You're kidding, right? He says, and he's keeping a straight face. He says, "Yeah, his name is Jose." And again, it just kind of caught me by surprise that they were just so quick at talking about racial things without, like, giving second thought. I mean, it was just quick responses. And I'm saying, wow, how quick is it that they respond like that and talk like that about racial issues, or I guess making fun of race, without really kind of giving it second thought, you know? Another quick scenario, our VP is giving an overview, a company overview, and he gets to a section that he's talking about ethics, a quick ethics overview for the company. And he talks about not accepting bribes and all different types of things. And he goes on to, there's a term in China that if you're in China, and because it's a global company, we have to talk about different countries and all, if we have to do business with other countries. And he mentions this word, and he says, "Well, I'm not even going to really try to pronounce this word, you know. Just be careful if you ever go to China." And then it says, and this is the vice president who's giving this overview, again, during the ethics overview. And he says later on, he says, hopefully you'll never have to go to China, you know. And people just kind of chuckle. There's a Chinese woman that's there, and you know, a worker there, and I see a few people kind of looking at her. She's kind of looking straight, and I'm saying, this is an ethics overview, and here's the vice president making a flight of China. How hypocritical is that, you know? Another one, couple real quick scenarios. You talk about, you know, if you have your own business versus working at a company, you're still going to have to deal with the racism. So sometimes I do some of these holiday craft fairs. I have my own table set up with my craft and all. And generally, there's almost all white people that support and are participate as well as shop at these events. There's hardly any blacks. Usually whenever a black person comes through, they never come to my table, never even look at me hardly. But one of the other crafters next to me, just kind of out of the blue, says, would you like a piece of chocolate? It's made from Africa. I'm saying, no, I'm okay. No, thank you. But again, just quick out of the blue, just off guard, totally caught me off guard. Why is he offering me chocolate from Africa? And then says, well, it's really good too. You know, it's really, really delicious. Another crafter, another event, we're talking, and he's selling T-shirts. He says, yeah, I got T-shirts here. And we're talking about, okay, what do you have there? I've got T-shirts that says, I love Puerto Rico. And another one I have says, I love Africa. You know, and really got some nice shirts. Come over and check them out. Here again, quick, you know, the first thing they think of, oh, because you're black, and oh, yeah, you're going to want this product because it's from Africa. And that's pretty much my few scenarios there. Appreciate you letting me share.
Wow, that's quite a number of incidents there. Just based on some of the things, again, I hope black people, victims of white supremacy who tune into the weekly workplace racism segment, one of the things that we can work towards is not being surprised or caught off guard when whites practice racism, particularly the incident when you talked about your suggestions and saving, you know, thousands of dollars. You know, this is, you know, pretty substantial. We're talking business and not being given any credit. That is, you know, standard operating procedure for centuries, maybe even longer, that whites have been doing that, taking the brilliance, genius ideas and concepts of black people all over the world and using them and not giving black people credit for them. And we talk about that here on the job all the time. I think we just had the black female caller from last week where she talked about getting the, I think it was like $250,000 gift. It was a substantial amount of money, might have even been $500,000 dollar gift. And they, you know, did all this sabotaging and everything. They got not congratulations and thanks so much for helping us. Some Negro did. That's, you know, we talked about that and just not being shocked about that. Even when you do things that, you know, are helpful for the company and are doing things to grow the business, racism, white supremacy trumps that, and to not be surprised or stunned about that. Also, I thought that moment with the basketball, I think that's pretty common as well. We've had lots of folks on the program where they've said that whites, they just assume, I think particularly, especially with black males, just assume that when they come and talk to you, oh, I've got this nigger here. We'll talk about some nigger subjects. Oh, how do you like those Lakers? Yeah. What about the local ball team? They just assume that's, you know, you're a puny Negro mind. That's about all that you're capable of talking about. And that's about all I'm, you know, going to talk to you about anyway. I'm certainly not going to share any great financial tips or anything like that with you. I think that's a great opportunity if you have not, like, talked to this person, to say, oh, yeah, I love, you know, basketball or whatever it is. That's a great opportunity to be like, you know, did I tell you that I like basketball? And not with an attitude or anything, but I mean, like, genuine curiosity. Like, you know, did I tell you, Bob, that I like basketball? And just see what he says, because they'll probably go on the defense and be like, oh, man, just be like, yeah, because I think Thomas and some of the other folks that we've had a part of their workplace code, regardless of whether you follow any athletics, not talking about athletics on the job. And I endorse that completely. I don't care if you have every single statistic for the Golden State Warriors memorized for the last 5 years. That's totally irrelevant. On the job, oh no, I don't watch basketball at all. I just don't have the time to keep up with it. And I encourage that because it allows for nonsense. We should be talking serious with the whites, talking about things that are happening here. They probably got things, new rules and things that are happening right now where they're trying to get you out of your job. And we're going to be sitting here wasting time talking with them about, you know, what happened at the Super Bowl or some other. Come on, man. Like, yeah, not talking about it at all. That can be a great chance to ask questions on the job if you choose. Sometimes, you know, you can just. Yeah, I don't know. I haven't been keeping up with it. And, you know, ask a question that's job related, or I got to get back to my desk, or, you know, however you want to process, deal with the situation. Other folks, thank you so much for dealing with so many different incidents. And I certainly appreciate the portion at the end about working for yourself. You're still absolutely going to have to deal with workplace racism. Still going to have to deal with racist man, racist woman, racist child. Other folks who dialed in that we've not heard from, if you have commentary on what's been discussed so far, if you have your own situation you want to discuss, feel free. Line should be open.
Have you heard?
Yes, sir.
Hey, how's it going, everyone? This is a black male caller that works in the airplane technology field. And I just had a couple of things that have been happening over the past couple of weeks that I wanted to share. So I'll start with yesterday, one of my teammates came to me near the end of the day, and he remarked that I was quiet. I said, man, you're kind of quiet. You've been quiet lately. You don't talk to anybody, huh? And, you know, I'm thinking in my head that, well, that's because I feel like as a black person, non-white, I should speak only when it's relevant about work. Anything else is irrelevant to me on the job because I see black people getting caught up in very interesting conversations about athletics and culture, and it's very uncomfortable to me at work. And for the past couple of days, my boss has been just appearing behind me. So I'll be, you know, I work with technology. It's a very math intensive field. So I get very involved in my work. My boss will just appear behind me and won't say anything for like 20 seconds. And then he'll just get kind of loud to get my attention. He's done that at least 5 times in the past 4 days. It's really annoying. And it's like, I don't know. It's kind of scaring me, making my heart rate jump, because I don't know the purpose of that other than to terrorize me. I also have an insane amount of work piled on, probably for about 4 people, because one guy is on vacation and we're just down people, period. And a black male left the team. And this same boss was very angry about it. He remarked that, you know, we're just a team where people come and get trained and they leave. And his tone of voice and the fact that he repeated that like 3 or 4 times led me to believe that he was really angry about this black male leaving and getting a promotion. I think that's the thing he was most angry about. And lastly, our organization is going to hire 60 engineers this year and 40 next year. And I can assure you there will be no black people because there are only 2 black people on the whole team of like 300 something engineers, only 2 black people, despite them having diversity initiatives. Like they, like literally from the top down, they said, this is a diversity initiative and we're pushing it. 2 black people out of 300 engineers. It's just ridiculous. And it is very blatant in terms of the terror that they try to put black people through. There are only 2 of us. And we're the only 2 people that get reprimanded. And it's that bad that, you know, people have gotten lawyers and they're doing cases. And I don't know, it's just an interesting situation. And it just proves to me that under racist man, racist woman, racist child, you as a black person have to be very codified, or the amount of stress that it can cause you can cause you to fall ill or even die, honestly. And that's all for now.
absolutely right. The stress from racism, white supremacy, that's what it is designed to do. And that terrorism that you talked about, any of the people that listen to workplace racism on a regular basis, really, if you listen to the cows on a regular basis, or if you have listened to a number of episodes in the archives, but we have heard this before. I have. It's in the archives before, where we have had black people talking about whites sneaking up on them at the job in various different situations. I think I've heard that multiple times. People talking about even something recently. If we have one of the callers who mentioned that, if you're present or if you're listening live right now, it would be great to hear your, you know, response, or maybe you can tell if you want to share how you dealt with it. But we've heard this before. And exactly what you said, you didn't know why he was doing this other than to terrorize you. That's the answer. That's why whites do a lot of what they do on the planet, is just to practice racism. There's no other purpose. There's no other motivation at all other than I enjoy. It makes me feel good. My life force about mistreating, harming black people especially. And just that stress of having some racist jump out at you at any moment and got you and yelling. I mean, come on. What type of professionalism is this? And that's the way even I would approach it. I mean, come on. Is this the way that we're supposed to behave in the workplace? Are we in grade school? Is this recess? Or are we on the job? I thought we were. That's why I said about being serious on the job. I would make that very, very clear that, I mean, do we do this when the CEO of the company comes in? If this is an engineering firm, that's what you talked about. Is this what we do when the CEO comes? We're playing gotcha. We jump hiding in the closet and gotcha, Mr. Thomas. Come on, man. Let's be serious. Like, I'm here to work. I am not here to joke around. I'm not playing hide and seek or freeze tag. Let's be professional. That's the way that I would deal with that, to stop all of that. And it's been my experience that sort of those shenanigans when whites can, I was just, you know, just joking around, just trying to liven things up, you know, and it will escalate and just get more and more tacky and terroristic. I would try and stop that immediately right there before it even, you know, gets any further along, and really being mindful about that stress, because that, I mean, it can take a huge toll. If you're feeling stressed, do things to mitigate and deal with self-care. If that means, you know, taking a day off or what have you, or altering what you're doing when you are away from work so that you can do things that are more stress relieving, making sure you're not around people that are going to contribute to your stress when you're away from the job. And also, I think Roz has talked about in your like workstation, if you've got this, okay, this guy is coming out and trying to jump, perhaps having mirrors in your work area so that you can see what's happening around you. That can give you kind of a better peripheral vision so that you can be more mindful, more aware. If, you know, they're trying to sneak out and do those type of things, that might help. Did other folks that I guess dialed in, folks had any suggestions, thoughts on what we've heard thus far? Certainly if the individual or any of the folks who have dealt with that, whites jumping out and trying to like surprise you or scare you in a workplace situation, if we've had other people who've dealt with that, please dial in, because I think this is what I mean about patterns, where you can just see the same types of activities being practiced. It doesn't matter whether we're talking Arizona, Florida, Texas, Paris, they're doing the same things, racist code. But if we have anyone who's dealt with that, that would be great to hear from as well. Other folks who had commentary or your own situation you want to address?
Can I be heard?
Greetings, retired firefighter, Florida.
Greetings, everyone. I'll just comment some of my thoughts with the last caller. What I think when a non-white black person is quiet, what I think that's code for with a white person is that's a black person that's thinking, and also that's a black person that is aware of my racist behavior. And it makes a white person a little uncomfortable, not from the standpoint of they're afraid of you, you know, like, boo, afraid of you, but they, it makes them uncomfortable. So they kind of like are testing you, sending you through all this, these mind games of trauma, with the tactics of coming up behind you and things of that nature. I really don't know on what can possibly be done other than, you know, keeping your concentration on your job and doing the things that you know that you're responsible for doing on a daily basis. The basic attributes about keeping employment, like being on time, attire, that sort of thing, would you know, keep that up, you know, and you know, just make it difficult for them to go to any serious levels of getting you out of employment from that standpoint. One thing that, with the help of a few others, matter of fact, one of them was a guest on the program, what we were able to do is create what we called a space for ourselves on the job. But that job that I did have, it already had a very stringent unionized environment about things, about basically protecting the quote unquote the employees. Now, I'm not saying that was earmarked for black people, but certainly within the scope, we basically benefit from it. You know, you would have to come out and almost say that you're going to mistreat that black person, you know, if they were going to go by the union rules and whatnot, that sort of thing. And I'm just mentioning some of the things that I hear on this particular show program all the time that I didn't really go through if I did go through it, it was a very short term basis. As soon as I, you know, raise my attention towards it to that person, then it resided, you know, very quickly, you know, things of that nature. You know, hang in there as best as you can. But like I said from the beginning, I suspect that white person or white people in general, when a black person is quiet, they are doing something that white people don't want them to do, which is to think, is to be thinking about their behavior, and their behavior, for the most part, they understand it is racist. And that's, I'll just hold on for additional comments. Thank you. Hopefully that made some sense.
Amen. Me too.
Officer?
Greetings, Thomas in New York.
Greetings, Gus. Good evening to all. Firefighters, right? Highly unionized. You can spit in a little black kid's face and not lose your job. It's a very unionized job at the firefighter. I had a lot of things that the shed so far has happened to me. It's so funny. You know, a few weeks ago, this white guy comes up to me and he just out of the blue starts talking about, you know, hey, you know, NBA, you know, who you like in college? So I said, well, I don't watch television. I usually don't have time to watch television. I haven't followed the NBA, but I said, I don't watch college basketball. You don't watch college? It's about to be on. And I said, yeah, but the report just came out. This was like 2 days right before this report came out, the 13th Amendment. They're going to use the 13th Amendment clause to make the players not get paid. I said, so I pretty much positioned, I can't remember exactly how I worded it, but I worded it in a very slick way to say, I'm not watching slaves play basketball. And he said, you know, they get a lot of under the table stuff and da 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 da. So I switched the conversation from talking about basketball to talking about white supremacy. And, of course, it ended pretty quickly, you know, right after that. So another guy, this guy, I think I might have said this, but it's two sides of the office, an audit side and a tax side. And on the audit side, it seems to be a lot of Asian people. Two of the partners are non-white. An African fella. The administrative assistants on that side are non-white. And most of the auditors are from China or another Asian country. So when he walked past, he said, I saw him. And just out of, passing him and just, making small talk, because he generally, seemed very pleasant when he would come around me. I said, oh, man, shocked to see you on this side of the office. And he said, I got to go to the dark side every now and then. He kept walking, so I just assumed that he meant. I don't know if I said, did I tell you that before, Gus? Either way, Gus. Either way, so this same partner, he comes up to me the other day, and he says, I went to this this seminar, and Shaquille O'Neal spoke. And, I had no idea he was so articulate, and he seems like he has a good head on his shoulder. And, I totally blew my mind from, what I expected him to be. He reminded me a lot like you. So I said, oh, okay. So since that day, he come in the cubicle I sit in, it's the colored printer. So everyone comes who prints off of that printer, they come there. He generally does. So he'll, the color copy machine. So he sent it from his desk and print it out, and he'll come over there to pick it up. And he's been calling me, hey, Shaq, my man Shaq, but he keeps it moving, so I haven't had a chance to correct him. But I've noticed that as well. The food situation, I got scolded Monday by the person who seems to be the person who wants things. And she, you're buying too much fruit. And I want you to cut it down immediately, and she made like a real smart comment. Now, in particular, this one part, and like I said, he's the one that's complaining. So now he's going on to complaining about, I guess he feels as though I'm not listening to him. So he's complaining about that to other people now. However, on this particular day, since it's tax season, they've been ordering lunch every day. So, and it was Monday, so I had double the amount of mail to distribute and other things to do because, during the weekend people were working. And so either way, I didn't get the food until a little later. So the lunch came right as I put the food out. So that's why, it wasn't, because the next day I did the same thing, got the amount that they gave me the money for, and it was all gone that day. So it just seemed like I have to time it when it's this tax season. I'm realizing I have to time it around this lunch to get it done a lot earlier, so that way it goes. And I'll mute my line for now. Thank you.
As the fruit turns, wowee, Thomas in the Big Apple. In my view, if people were with us when we read Edward Baptist, The Half Has Never Been Told. I think that was 2016. It's been 9 years. I'm a victim. My memory might be off. But we read The Half Has Never Been Told, and they talked about how on the plantation, sometimes the white enslaver, rapist, they would just, come out and arbitrarily change things around just so they could have an excuse. Like yesterday, let's say you picked 45 pounds of cotton. Great job, boys and gals. Good job. Then you come in tomorrow, Friday, and you pick 45. And oh my God, that's going to be 50 lashes. You didn't do enough. Just arbitrarily switching around. Just so I enjoy terrorizing niggers. You see that, in my opinion, that is the fruit salad. Now, to be at a firm, this sounds like a place that it doesn't sound like some Mickey Mouse lemonade stand type operation where they're barely getting by and, having to pass the hat around to pay the electric bill from month to month. They have nothing better to do than to go around and get like a gang, a posse of whites to gripe about the produce Are you serious? Like, come on, man. Like, just my little way of being a little petty racist tyrant. I can come in and just terrorize Thomas every day about how many bananas did you get? Are you stealing the bananas? Did you get too many bananas? Like, come on. And again, one white person, I think you said this before, could have solved all of this way, way back, and just instead of $60, now we're going to give you $40. Now, problem solved. They could have taken care of this like eons ago. As for the Shaq thing, I think you already said, as soon as you have an opportunity, just for anybody else, do not even that sort of thing where they try and pass it off as, oh, but, you know, this is a term of endearment and, you know, I love Shaq. He's great. Or whoever it is. I wouldn't care who they're calling you. You want to be called by your name every time. Not anybody else. Every time. Thank you kindly. If that means you have to correct them every day, that's what it means. Other people have great strategies. You can ignore them, whatever it is. But that is not acceptable in the system of racism, white supremacy. I already mentioned the sports thing. I'm sure it'll be a whole lot of that, you know, as baseball season kicks in and all that other stuff. Other folks who dialed in, if you have commentary that we have not heard from you, if you have commentary on anything that we've discussed thus far, if you have your own situation you want to address, again, if we have any folks who have dealt with whites jumping out at you on the job, this is not a time to be a spectator, because I know I am not crazy in this regard. I know we have had Cal's listeners who have dealt with that and called in to talk about white people jumping out at them on the job, how you dealt with that to neutralize it, and just confirming this is something that seems to be pretty regular, a pretty common occurrence for racists to engage in with black people on the job. Other folks, if you have comments.
Can I say one more thing, Gus?
Yes, sir.
The Half Have Not Been Told, I think, is probably the most informative book that we've read thus far. I mean, just filled with information about slavery that, you know, you never even would have thought. But either way, I had the opposite effect, right? Because I have the same white females who every time they turn the corner and I'm there, or, you know, they look up because, you know, a lot of people are always looking down in their phone or they're reading something as they're walking. And they look up and I'm walking past them, they jump back like, oh, I don't know why I keep doing that every time I see. And that's just how they keep going. But I had that happen to me. And the same people, I've noticed, if I'm walking outside the office, let's just say I'm walking toward them and they're, you know, in their regular walking mode. I mean, they look at me, but they don't really see me. They don't even recognize me. They just keep walking. And I'm a 6'5". 300-pound black dude. I mean, you know, but it's just that mentality. I think that, you know, to me, for sure, those are racist, because they're startled by black people, especially black men. Just jump like I feel like I'm almost want to jump when they jump because they scare me. But yeah, it's like two or three of them.
That does still seem to be sizably different than someone actively trying to scare you, as opposed to whites just being startled at the sight of a Negro. Like that, like their racist startle is substantially different from I'm actively trying to terrorize someone. I suspect other folks can probably relate to that as well. The bumping into coworkers who say that they are startled. I think I can even give an anecdote on that as we proceed with the broadcast. Other folks who dialed in, if you have a hand up, commentary, if we haven't heard from you, if you have a hand up, line should be open.
Hi, can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, good evening, everybody. This is the software developer from Wisconsin. I've had that happen to me several times. People coming into my cubicle trying to startle me. Generally, I'll just ask, why did you do that, or what are you doing? Usually it's a hard knock on your desk. Or one time I was at work, and I was in my cubicle, and I just turned around. And I was doing my job, and the suspected racist calls my name. And when I turn around, he does this high kick, like very close to my face. He didn't kick me, but it was very close to my face. He's like, oh, I'm just playing. I said, oh. I said, well, let me document this and I can take it to HR. Oh, no, we don't need to do that. And, you know, I documented it and he never did it again.
Oh, caller in Wisconsin, are you with us? Caller in Wisconsin, are you still?
Can I be heard?
Oh, okay, we can hear you now. It dropped out. It dropped out when you said that you documented it about going to HR, and then he never did it again, and then the audio dropped out.
Oh, okay. There was the weird subconference announcement came through. I don't know. I documented it. He never did it again. But I've noticed in IT, there seems to be an issue with black men, especially. They seem to hire more black females than black males. And there seems to be sort of this, this concentrated effort to push black males out of the company or out of the industry. That could be just a subset of just how they treat black males in general in society. But it is something to be mindful of. That's all I have on that one. I do practice just being very clear and very firm. And why did you do that? You know, what do you need? Why are you over here? And then keeping things very short and just, I'm here to talk about business. I'm not going to talk about Seth Rogen films or basketball or whatever it is that you want to talk about today. That is not what I'm interested in. It's primarily interested in there's a task and how do we get it done. So that's all I have to say about that. I do have some updates, Gus, but I'll wait if you want to get some more callers in.
All right, on. Well, make sure we get the updates. I thought we did have other folks who dealt with racists trying to jump out and terrorize black people on the job. I think we still have others who have dealt with that. Please dial in the number 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. I was going to comment, give out another A+ with regards to workplace codification. But before I do, important matters. Our call in Wisconsin nabbed an item from my wish list. Massage balls are phenomenal. Just that alone. We talked about stress release. Man, just that alone. Just something simple that you can do. They have these little massage balls. They are not super expensive. Man, huge impact just massaging your feet at the end of a day. I know a lot of us for different jobs and things, you have to be on your feet. You have a lot of nerves in your feet. Just really, really simple thing that you can do that has a really big impact. But man, huge, 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 huge appreciation for that. Now, back to the workplace situation. When the race soldier came and kicked at your face. Now, imagine a black person in a job situation in particular. Imagine if a black male, since this was a white guy, goes and kicks at the face of a white woman in that situation. They might have a SWAT unit in the cubicle. I mean, come on. But that was phenomenal. The exact got in the question lane. Why are you doing this? Why did you do that? That's a great question to ask if the race soldiers are, you know, doing the jump out and trying to scare you terror tactic. Why are you doing this? And let me document this immediately and take this to HR. Outstanding. And apparently permanently solved the problem. You said he never did it again. That's what we're trying to achieve. Permanently solve the problem without creating any new problems. And I just cannot imagine most of these types of things. I'm not saying that they would never do this to a white person, but in my view, lots of these things, this is reserved for niggers. This is how I terrorize. This is how I practice racism, white supremacy. These are people that I can go and engage in these type of, you know, hijinks and terrorism to go and kick it. I mean, come on. And again, you do not just want to minimize and, oh, we're just playing around and that sort of thing, because it's that today. Who knows? It might be a slip and you actually get kicked the next time or anything. Just, we're not here to play games. I'm especially not here to play games with people who are terrorists. Take it very, very seriously. That is A plus the first time it happens. Stop it at the knees. Cut it off at the knees. That's what when we had our guest on the program, Walter Beach III, last year, he said, cut it off at the knees before it even gets started. Exactly. That should be primarily in our thinking with regards to workplace codification. First time, last time, stop it immediately. We have other folks who dialed in either with your own situation or if you have commentary on what has been shared thus far. If you have a hand up, mine should be open.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Hello, it's the caller from South Korea.
Oh, wow.
I was just
greetings.
Listening. Greetings. It's Friday, 10:15 a.m. here.
Appreciate it.
I was just calling to confirm, no, Gus, you're not crazy. I'm across the world and the same exact thing happened to me. I'm unemployed right now, but at my previous elementary school I was working at, I was working with a white male and my desk faces the door to the entryway of the classroom. So no one can really sneak up on me. However, if I was preparing materials for the class, I might be really into the computer trying to find some fun games for my students. And then I will look up and he'd be standing right over me. And I'm sitting down for one, and I'm already a short person, and he's very tall. So he's like 6'2", and he's just standing right over me. The first time he did it, I didn't say anything. I just continued the conversation as normal. Then the second time he did it, I did what the previous caller did. I just asked, why are you standing over me? Like, just why? He was like, oh, I was just thinking of what to say. I didn't know what to say yet. So I just came in here to see what you were up to. And I was like, don't stand over me like that. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize I was standing so close to you. And same thing as the previous caller. He didn't do it again, but I just find that very interesting. I noticed, I don't understand this trend. I guess it's what you said. It's just to terrorize people. I know one of the previous callers said that it made his heart rate jump. And I mean, what if someone were to have like a mild stroke or heart attack? We already have increased cortisol levels as it is. So, I mean, anything could happen. Another instance, the same school I was working at, I was walking to get coffee and I had my headphones in, ironically listening to the cows. And I got to the coffee shop and I turned around and I opened the door to go inside the coffee shop. And I saw his reflection in the glass of the coffee shop door. And I said, how long have you been following me? He's like, since you left the school. He was walking behind me the whole 5-minute walk to the coffee shop. So just little things like that. I noticed like white people like to follow you and pop up on you for some reason. I'm not sure. I guess, you know, just to terrorize you. But yeah, I just wanted to confirm that. And you're not crazy. I beat my line.
At least in that regard. I will at least, you know, I'm willing to concede that much, at least with regards to whites jumping out and scaring black people, terrorizing black people on the job. No, I think I am sane on that one. Now, as it relates to everything else, come to your own conclusions. Number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61. If you would like to participate, and I just can't emphasize it enough, you really have to be mindful about that, particularly really anywhere, but especially workplace situations where you're with whites that you're going to be around for like a significant amount of time over a long period of time, could be years in some cases, that whites, they surveil, they network, they share information, they are paying attention. I mean, we talk about being mindful. They are mindful of their niggers, and we really have to recognize that. I can even tell you that from a yoga perspective, because that's I spend so much time there, you know, taking classes and what have you, hours and hours per week, that's kind of like almost a little part-time job per se. And it's the same thing where they network, where I was talking to one suspected racist yoga instructor about how long I had been practicing, and I had taken classes in California before. Within less than 24 hours, different suspected racist instructor was going to take the person's class, and before I could even say hello, was, oh yeah, I heard that you went to California and took such and such and such and such. It's like, exactly. Not that I cared about, you know, that information being shared. I've said consistently, when you speak, just make sure that you're speaking and what you're saying, you are comfortable with that being shared with all of the whites on your job, maybe all the whites in the world, but certainly everybody on your job. They're going to hear what you just said. It's going to be written down, saved, stored, published online. Just get in a habit of speaking that way so that you're not surprised. Keep saying that over and over. That's supposed to be another one of the main objectives of this program, specifically not being surprised about whites practicing racism on the job. And I mean, even getting into specifics, white person jumps out to scare you on the job. Already heard about that sort of thing, or them not calling you by your name, not being stunned, and already having some responses prepared for these type of racist antics. Other folks who dialed in, if you have commentary, if we've not heard from you, appreciate hearing from our caller all the way in South Korea Friday morning. Other folks we've not heard from at all. I think Stacy in the UK is here as well. Make sure we get our total international flavor. Stacy in the UK, Friday morning, and I think they got their 8-hour time difference back, so it's 2:21 a.m. Friday morning.
Precisely. I guess. Hi to everyone else on the call.
Morning.
I don't know if this counts as, I think it counts as coming up behind and startling. There used to be this male who worked in the same organisation. He's no longer there. He used to just come up to me and try and pull my chair from underneath me. And other times when I was walking, grab me from behind and try and pull me backwards. And I have intermittent problems with my back, so we had to put a stop to that really soon. But I just couldn't work out why anyone would be so stupid, because certainly when I was a child at school, that was one thing we were told: don't try and pull a chair from underneath people, it's dangerous. But this fool used to do all kinds of stuff in the office. So I don't know, does that count as terrorizing you behind you and trying to do stuff? I don't know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's the same, you know, sort of thing that some people would just chalk that up and say, oh, they're just being childish or immature. And Chantel, she called in, I forgot, just I think 2 weeks ago. And she said they were in a meeting. And I think it was someone high up, like a high level executive, tried to trip her. Coming out of them, they were in a board meeting and he stuck his foot out and tried to trip her and she saw it and she stopped. But yeah, all of that, all of these little hijinks that, again, they were just, and I think that's what he said. Oh, I was just, you know, just messing around, just, you know, being a little silly. We are in a professional work environment. This is not the playground. We're not in elementary school. And as you said, with some of this stuff, you could injure someone. I mean, you got back problems and you're coming trying to snatch a chair out from under me. Like, come, what are you doing? Questioning. But yes, absolutely. And I, again, when the caller touched on, caller in South Korea, when he talked about the higher levels of cortisol for Black people being under all of this stress, again, think about Dr. Frances Cress Welsing, the stress that she was under that led to her passing away in 2016. We read Gwen Ifill, the breakthrough, her passing away at 62. Stress, racism, white supremacy, all of that adds up. Being abused and terrorized, just trying to keep the job. People talking about being reprimanded and written up for being too quiet, or you were 5 seconds late 3 times last week or over the last year. And we got all of that stress that we're already under, and then just these, or put that in quotes, little incidents of them coming in, trying to frighten you and pulling your chair out and trying to trip you, all of those things add up. And that's how you end up with the caller that we had a couple weeks ago saying he was at the breaking point. Something's going to happen. I'm going to do something. They're kicking at my face today and trying. All of these little things, they're deliberately designed to undermine Black health and well-being. And again, whites do these things not out of ignorance. They are deliberate acts of white terrorism. It makes them feel that might be the only good moment that they have in their day. I got to terrorize that nigger. I snatched her chair out from under her. I kicked at her face today. That was my only good moment for the whole Monday, but I got that one in. Hopefully I can get another one tomorrow. Other folks who dialed in, if you have either your own situation you want to touch on or if you have commentary on what we've discussed thus far, lines should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir. Caller in Florida Courthouse.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you very much. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. I want to start out with 2 points. The one about the white people trying to deliberately jump out of somewhere to try to scare you, frighten you. I do recall like an incident where I went upstairs on my route to pick up documents. And I think I was on the third floor at one time. And that would be like an older white lady. And I predicted she was, I could see the, like the foot shadows beneath the door, you know, and the person would sit to the back and she had a button, like a remote button to open the door because it's highly secured. And it was like a screen, a camera light that would come on to signify that it's going to open the door. So I turned the knob and I knew the lady was going to try to jump out and scare me. So I just stood still and ignored her like she wasn't even there. She was like, wow. I think she said, you didn't even get scared or anything. And I said, oh, I didn't know you were standing there or something. I couldn't remember. It was something of that nature that I said, because it was about maybe like 3 or 4 years ago. And my codification wasn't as sharp as it was or that it is now. So I was just there to pick up my the documents that I was taking downstairs. But she was deliberately, intentionally trying to jump out and scare me to cause some kind of fearful reaction out of me. And laughing about it, too. You know, smiling and laughing about it. Taking enjoyment and pleasure in trying to scare a black person. And you should have saw the face on the white woman in the back. Like, she wasn't trying to warn me or anything. Neither. She was just kind of smiling. Like, I guess she thought I was going to fall for it. And the next one I wanted to point out was that it was around like maybe 3 o'clock, maybe yesterday. Yeah, it was yesterday. I was walking around on the first floor doing some more pickups. And the conference room, I'm thinking it was at least quite a bit of new employees, like both people who hadn't started yet and people who are new. And I'm going to say maybe around like 10 to 12, maybe 14 black females, 2 white women in there. And the ward number 1, who I had called out in the meeting. And she was in there smiling, I guess, introducing or going over the protocols and procedures of the company with the clerk sitting on the opposite end. So that reminded me of that. And the last black male that was hired, his last day is tomorrow, ironically. So he didn't get paid anything. He didn't get no raise or no promotion, which leads me into this one where a white man, he was invited back and he was the ones introduced in the meeting. And I know he got increased compensation. Now I can't confirm the numbers and all of that, but he was trying to get out of there. Now the significance of this is both of them have offspring, you see, and he had to have been offered money and negotiated salary. And another white woman was negotiating their salary, her salary too. But the black male was in the same apartment. He, from my understanding, he told me he was refused to get any more money. And he just been over there at least a little over a year. So he's got a child too, but he couldn't get any kind of help. So just comparisons like that, I jotted that down. I wrote that down because there is a shortage of them hiring black males at least maybe every 4 or 5 years. Because I started in 2011, June 2011. So I'll be on my 7th year in June. So between then, there's been maybe about 2 black males that have been hired within the last 7 years. So there's definitely a ratio difference. And my next point is, I was about to go up the elevator and I had to go pick up some documents with a signature from the judge. And I was talking to a black female in the lobby area while the elevator was coming down. And the white woman is just walking up to me like she's trying to tell me something. I don't know. She looked a little familiar. I think she worked upstairs. So I get on the elevator. She gets on and she asked me, hey, are you going to the self-help area? This is an area where people who are trying to get advice for legal issues and who have cases and whatnot from the civil area. So blatant racial insult, racist, intentional racist insult in my view. And I'm like, well, I can show you where it's at. Like, did you want to know where it was? Because I was heading up that way. It's like, oh, no, I thought you might have been trying to go on the way there. So I was like, oh, no, not heading on over there. I got other things to do. I didn't even tell her that I worked there, but she apparently assumed that I was some kind of a person who was on some kind of, I guess, not really a criminal, but someone who's in legal troubles. I'll phrase it that way. And there was another thing I wanted to mention also, and this could be retaliatory, because like I processed the mail, okay, and there could be some psychological racism going on, because I had an envelope and I've been documenting. Anytime I catch an envelope that would end up being returned back from the post office, and there was this one that stood out specifically that went out on 3/16/18. I was on a Friday afternoon, okay, and I took it back upstairs to a white woman, the lead worker, because the supervisor wasn't there. And last Thursday, this envelope comes back and it has postage on it, like it's been ran through the machine. But I took a picture of an envelope that looked just like that, and it was on the same date that was on the stamp. Okay, so like, let me run that by you again. Like, on the phone, with technology these days, you look at when the picture was taken. It was on that. It was on the 16th, the same day. So I typed out an email after I verbalized to my boss that an envelope back that looked just like this without stamp, but it did not have any postage on it, and it didn't have an address. It was an unaddressed envelope. So it seemed like she was kind of dodging. And what I mean by that, she didn't confirm whether or not that was the same envelope or it was a different one, but she gave an opinion that she thought it was a different one. And she replied in CC saying that, well, we're going to make sure that we're going to get labels on the envelopes and mailing addresses on there, not make these mistakes. Okay, so white man, after that, I suspect it was either him or two other white women, and I guess you can say this female is non-black, but I think she thinks in her mind that she's a white person, but they treat her like she's not. I suspect these four people could have been down there tampering with the machine, because I seen there was a envelope in the wastebasket, and it was empty. Well, it wasn't an empty envelope. It was an envelope that was unaddressed, and it had 0.00 mail postage on it. So I think somebody put that there intentionally to see if I would come back and say something about it, to try and mark down a pattern of my responses to how I'm being mistreated. So, but I am like keeping a paper trail of it and emailing it to my personal email. And that's all I have right now. Thanks for allowing me to speak.
Smart document and sending it to your personal email. Very intelligent, just to keep your own record on how things are transpiring. The courthouse PhD study in white supremacy, racism. Now, keep in mind, now this is the same environment where apparently a suspected race soldier, white woman, who is no longer employed there, was conducting experiments, wearing the same clothes every day, trying to see, I guess, if she could dupe people into gossiping about her attire and what have you. And then she sent out a disclaimer afterwards, or a debrief, to let people know that she had, in fact, carried out this study. I mean, these are the type of people that are working in this environment. So keep that in mind when you hear the report about perhaps the machine was tampered with for them to make this charge that you had done something incorrect or needed to be reprimanded. Like, wow. Racist man, racist woman, and perhaps even the involvement of a non-white person. With the other, you did say there was one perhaps non-white person who may have been involved in this scheme. You said, if I heard right, a non-white, non-black female who thinks she is white, but they do not treat her like she is a white person. How, if I heard that correctly, how did you make that assessment?
I came to that conclusion by, she was, the reason why I said that was, she even herself had a document that she was kind of showing off, where she had a injunction, I guess, placed against an old boyfriend of hers. And I think this may have been a black male, but she, like, when they're filling out the paperwork, you have to identify, okay, you have to put on what racial classification you identify as, and she put white on there. But I'm looking at this person. She is melanated, and she's starting to straighten her hair a lot, because when she doesn't do it, it curls up, or it almost looks like an afro. And people have told her, like, hey, you know, I wish I had your skin color, and you're a person of color, you know, you're not white, basically. And I know she's with a white guy. She's has a white boyfriend, and I just try to ignore her, and pretty much not ignore, like, in a rude way. If I have to interact in regards to doing the work, I will, but I think she tries to identify with white people. And just to make another point, that I was assisting two black males, like, as customers, helping them out. And this white woman, she came through, and she was, like, humming, you know, like, humming, harmonizing a song. I was trying to listen to see what song she was humming, but I felt that was extremely suspicious for some reason. And I think it was intentionally racist. Maybe somebody else might pick that up as well, if you were in that situation or context. But this person, I do think she likes to identify as a white person, but is reminded that she isn't. So she might have some intense internalized self-esteem issues.
Fascinating. Thank you for the... The courthouse, they got racial classifications, like PhD study in white supremacy racism. And then the rebuff, or you could just, I was going to call them rebuffs, but just, you can listen to the comments that suspected race soldiers make. But, oh, admiring her complexion and that sort of thing, or if they say anything about her hair, and, you know, just paying attention to details like that is remarkable. At least my opinion would be, if that's the assessment that you've made, that this person is really white identified and tragic arrangement and all of that, got an injunction against a black male and all that, could be a very dangerous individual. And you think she could be involved in this, you know, plot where maybe they were tampering with the mail and all, could be a very dangerous person. Would have to be very careful in how I navigated around her. Sometimes one of the ways that people try to curry favor with whites is by showing their animosity towards black people, injunction against the black male previously. I would maybe be kind of careful around her. Was taking notes. It was so many. Normally you have so many different incidents, the jumping out. So we have another person to confirm the jumping out situation on the job pattern, the compensation issue. I think we've heard that a few times, pattern as well, with black male employees on your job not being compensated, because it was a different black, or I don't know if it's the same person, but I thought you mentioned previously about a black male got a position that was promised to a black female. He got it. He's been moved around all these different positions, still never got a raise, regardless of all the new and cool titles that he has had while he's been working down there in the Sunshine State, as they call it, pattern. And even going back to what the caller in Wisconsin said about them keeping black males specifically out of the tech industry, to have that come up again down in Florida at the courthouse, problem with black males and this black male not getting compensation when a white male is able to get compensation. Great job documenting and just, again, get my plug in about that good old black male privilege. Man, I have heard a lot of nonsense in my time studying racism, white supremacy. The lore, the myth of black male privilege is pretty high up there. And just in my view, the fact that you have like scholars, people that have like major degrees and have done years of study, and they advocate or even talk about the possibility of such a concept in the system of white supremacy, just for me, reinforces the monumental distance that we have to go in solving this problem, that confusion is way high. Racists have done a great job spreading confusion. Confusion is lethal. Lethal, said that for years. I had other notes. Yes, taking notes. I thought that was hugely important about the difference in compensation for what's going to be taking place. The jumping out, I mentioned that specifically. You mentioned that the person who jumped out, they have all this high-tech gadgetry and cameras and what have you in their office. Again, I cannot imagine, if we're in this serious of a work environment, this is a courthouse, I cannot imagine these type of hijinks being directed at a white person. Not that they don't do, you know, mistreat other whites, but this sort of foolishness is generally reserved for black people in the office practicing racism. We have other folks that we have not heard from at all. Any folks that we've not heard from at all, if you have commentary, you should go ahead and speak up. Did we miss someone? Oh, I thought I heard someone speak up. We have other folks who had other commentary that they wanted to get in. I know our caller in Wisconsin said she had additional comments to share. If other folks have comments that they want to get in, feel free.
Hi, guest. Can I be heard again?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. This is calling Wisconsin again. Previously, I called in and spoken about a promotion that I was supposed to get, and they instead decided to schedule a meeting with me to ask me a few questions about how I felt about the job. So I had that meeting, and at that meeting, he asked me three questions, and they were as follows. Do you feel your work is appreciated? Do you feel you receive enough accolades for your work? and what needs to happen in the next year in order for you to feel it's been a successful year besides the promotion, which I thought was interesting. And I just the first question, I just said yes, because I haven't felt like my work isn't appreciated. The second question, I said, well, what do you mean by enough? Enough is relative, so what do you mean by that? And he said, oh, well, I know that enough is relative. I know that that's a relative term, but just, you know, based on your assessment, do you believe that you've gotten a lot of accolades for your work? And I said, well, I haven't received a promotion, so I don't think so. And then he again asked what needs to happen in the next year. And I said, well, you know, I'd like to be given more access to some front-end work and things of that nature. I personally, so I treat my job as like a learning place where I can gather information and figure out how I can use that information to help sort of erode the system. So any sort of extra work that they give me, I'm always glad to get, not because, you know, I don't want to be overworked, but I do want all the knowledge that I can get. So then he then canceled another one-on-one meeting that we were supposed to have. We have these meetings once every 2 weeks, and he canceled that meeting. And then the following Monday, I saw my former manager coming from the VP's office at around about 2 p.m. I then received an email from the VP titled, Quick Conversation on the New Team and How Things Are Going, about an hour and a half later, and that meeting was scheduled for 4:30. Now, right before I went into that 4:30 meeting, I saw my new manager coming from the VP's office. So I went into the VP's office at 4:15. He invited me to sit down at this little dining set that he has in his office. And he then said, well, let me give you the good news first. We've decided to give you a bonus. Not everyone got one. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, this is so tacky. I'm not getting the promotion. Instead, you're going to give me this bonus. I mean, a bonus is nice, but it's not the promotion. I said thank you. And then he said, I know things were so hectic with the new Keystones. That's what they started calling these new teams. But how are things now that everything's settled down? And I said, fine, that I didn't have any issues with the Keystones. And he looked puzzled. So I suspect, and I said that on purpose because I suspect that the managers were going in there and giving him information or feeding him information so that he would know how to speak to me, so to speak. So I gave him a little misinformation so I could see his response. And he did look puzzled, and I figured that sort of indicated what I thought before, which was that he had gotten that information. He then said, well, we really enjoy having you here. You seem to be able to learn things quickly and really be able to dig into things. Those aren't skills that everyone has. And I said, thank you again. And then he asked, do you need anything? How's your PC doing? And I said, well, it's a little slow. And he said, well, if you need anything, anything to do your job better, equipment or classes or whatever, just come to my office. My door is always open. And I said, thank you. And I left the office. Now, this is the first time I had been asked to meet with the VP. The last time I received a bonus, the news was conveyed via our instant message app by my manager. I spoke with my therapist, who's a Black female, and she's less confused. You know, she understands there's a system of white supremacy. She's very well aware. She's very suspicious of whites. And she said, well, I should be very wary at this point, that they are trying very hard to appease me and going too high up the chain to do so. And if they don't think that I'm appeased, they may be inclined to get rid of me. Now, I practice counter-racism as much as I can, or I attempt to practice it, and showing emotion is a part of my code, but that may be backfiring on me. I'm wondering if I should adjust to meet their expectations, or should I just continue with the attitude of, well, they're probably going to get rid of me at some point, so I should just stay the course. So that's the question I have out there. I'll mute my line.
Wow. So I guess just to make sure we understand it. So they brought you in for the meeting. Do you feel appreciated here at the company? You raised your comments about having not been promoted. they give you a bonus, which they, I guess, include that everybody didn't get a bonus. So I guess you should feel special, but no promotion. And then you hear from another victim of racism who you have some rapport with, who's less confused, that I guess the commentary is that they want to try to appease you in some way. But if it seems like you can't be satisfied, that they might be giving you your walking papers. Is that the assessment? And then if perhaps the way that you have been practicing counter-racism in the workplace, if that's backfiring based on the information that you got, and if maybe you should adjust to appear more satisfied in your position, is that what you're asking? Am I summarizing it correctly?
Yes, sir. That's it in a nutshell.
Okay. If listeners have thoughts on this one, certainly feel free to chime in. My assessment, I feel like it's always a very risky approach when non-white people, victims of white supremacy, begin to chase, and I'm using that word specifically, purposely, to chase white validation or acceptance or whatever. What I feel like that can be a very dangerous thing for victims of racism, white supremacy. Not saying that, you know, if you want to make adjustments to what you have been doing, but I mean, I don't know how jolly I would be if it's, you know, if I have been doing good work and they are pleased with my work. I mean, exemplary work from, you know, what you've been saying before for the company, then why is there an issue with me being promoted? You know, I mean, a bonus, as you said, is nice, but I mean, a promotion is much better in terms of long-term development for my career. And even financially speaking, if we're talking just from a money standpoint, generally you get a promotion, that's an increase in salary. I would much rather have a long-term increase in salary than a one-time, you know, hey, I got five extra pieces of cornbread today. Like, come on. I just don't know if I would be willing to pretend that I am thrilled with a situation that is not that thrilling, especially if I feel that, you know, based on the work that I've done and my value to the company is not commensurate with, you know, how I'm being treated. I mean, you can certainly make adjustments. I mean, I don't know what other adjustments would be. What when you say the way that you're practicing counter-racism maybe needs to be tweaked or refined, what things would you change specifically based on this information, this new information?
Well, you know, I've noticed, so I'm pretty like very, like no emotion, no emotion at all. Like I'll sit in meetings. I won't, there'll be nothing on my face. And I noticed that the white people that I work with get very uncomfortable. You know, I'll walk in and I'll just say morning. And that's it. You know, I'm not smiling or anything like that. And I notice that they look very uncomfortable. And I actually prefer that because I feel personally, and I heard Dr. Joy DeGruy say this a long time ago, but she said, you know, if white people like me too much, then I really have to, and I'm paraphrasing, but she's like, I really have to wonder why. And that's kind of my attitude too, is like, yeah, if you like me too much, then I'm probably not doing something correctly in terms of solving this larger problem. So maybe smiling more. Now, I do practice a sort of, and I've heard Emmy use this term for this same thing, where I do practice a sort of racial showcasing with white people, where there are certain white people that I'll smile and say good morning, you know, and that sort of throws people off because I'm not rude or I'm not quiet or I'm not, you know, I'm not, I guess, just, I don't know, for lack of a better term, I'm just not so serious with everybody, but I still don't, you know, I don't chit chat about things. You know, I'm very curt and abrupt usually with, I guess curt is not the correct word, but I'm just very, you know, just short and to the point. And always asking about work rather than personal things. So I have picked up this habit of, like, if I see pictures on somebody's desk, I'll say, oh, are those your children? Oh, that's a nice picture or something like that, even though I don't really think that. But that's kind of forced, right, because I really actually don't care about your terrorist children. I'm really not interested. And you can kind of tell that when I say that. But yeah, I don't know if I should just smile a little bit more or if I should just, I don't know, be more open. I've noticed that the lead architect, who I call the Grand Wizard, I've noticed that he keeps on sending me emails every time I do something. Oh, I'm so appreciative of what you've done here. And this is just so amazing. And I'm just like, what is this? You know? And it really makes me kind of worried, right? Because in Mr. Fuller's book, he talks about it. He says, well, you know, in a social material system dominated by white supremacy, everybody who's controlling the jobs, and I'm paraphrasing here, is either a white supremacist all jobs are directly or indirectly controlled by white supremacists. And so I'm like, well, this person is really high up. I have reason to suspect that he's a white supremacist. So why is he doing this? You know, because there's only really one reason why they interact with us, and that's to maintain or refine the system of white supremacy. So I don't know. That was a long-winded answer, but that's it.
I appreciated the response. We can hear, you know, what other folks have to say, and you are brilliant. You display that on the job all the time. I'm sure you can come to a sound conclusion that makes sense in terms of how you want to proceed. I've seen too many times where you can do all of those things and they still do not do right by you, to put it bluntly, in terms of giving you proper compensation and promotions, and or they still turn around and are terrorists and, you know, just mistreat you on the job, and or all of the above. So I'm of the opinion, again, I advocate with regards to workplace counter-racism, workplace courtesies. You speak to people, morning, Helen, morning, Bob, that sort of thing. You're not aloof, but I'm not here to joke around. I personally wouldn't even, you know, inquire about their children because I'm just not about nonsense. And particularly in tech, I feel like the tech field, some of these fields that are more about numbers and computers and what have you, like, hey, I signed up for this because I'm not all about going around. And so I didn't sign up to be a social worker. We're not going to work with children. Like, let's, you know, get back to doing the engineering and what we're doing. Go get my computer and let's get this work done. Like that. That's just my opinion. If you're doing superb work on the job, I would stand by my work. Be courteous, speak to folks, but I would not be doing a whole lot of adjusting to smile and giggle and be more chatty with whites on that, particularly if I'm not being compensated correctly and promoted. Like, nah, I'm just going to go about doing my work and, you know, that's that. But again, you know, you're in the best position to make that determination. Other folks dialed in. I think Emmy was mentioned. She has a hand up. Did you have a comment or three? You should be with us.
Greetings. Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Greetings, everybody. For me, while you were sharing your story and posed your question, I don't think, and I agree with Gus, I guess I would say this first. I agree with him when you will be the one to know the best final call on what to do in your environment, because you know them and you're there. I would say, though, from my experience, that when they begin to do all of that extra checking up on and constantly trying to give you encouragement, or whatever it is that they do, that the root of why they're doing it is to make you feel special or make you feel appreciated or just to even make you feel okay, that there's a larger plan further down the road that can and sometimes really does lead to termination. So had I had some of my experiences before, I would have been wiser and I would have seen that coming, because I think that they don't know that you're less confused, that is a strategy to help you lower your defenses. Then when you do that, you're more likely to make a mistake, or you're just not likely to see whatever it is that's coming. Had I known that before, what I would have done was downplayed everything. And since that I agree with Gus, I don't think you should adjust, become more perky or anything, because that would be disingenuous.
And I don't think it would be helpful. Now, if you went in that way, then you would have to maintain it. But to now adjust after you didn't get a promotion would just be fake. And everybody is paying a lot of attention to you right now. And so they would notice that. So I would just continue doing and being as I've been and what I've done. And then just continue to do the job and perhaps take that VP up on his offer. You said, I mean, because, you know, the end of the game, I never think that white people are trying to keep me around forever. Just so long as I'm useful or they find someone else that's willing to accept whatever it is that they're willing to give. So in the meantime, the question is posed, well, how do I make the best of my situation while I'm here? And I respect tremendously the thought of, well, whatever I do, even if it's just being a janitor, I'm going to learn as much as I can to see how I can put my part in replacing the system with justice. So if there are classes that you've been wanting or training that you think would be constructive or access to, I don't really know so much about your field, but like, I don't know, apps or special gadgets or whatever it is that could make your job easier or that you could learn to add to your repertoire, I would totally take him up on that. And I think that that would translate that you were still just as eager to learn, that you were still what they like to call a team player, that, you know, there's no hard feelings, because that's what they're, you know, no hard feelings about that thing. You're not getting promoted. That's not common. That's not uncommon. And that's not new. So just, you know, continuing to just be yourself and take advantage of whatever you have, but stay alert, because to me, it is very dangerous when white people do that, especially because they don't want to do it. So even though they're doing it, it's like, in my mind, in the back of their mind, they're gritting their teeth like, I don't even care about how she feels right now. I don't care that she sent the right email or did whatever, and now I got to sit here and tell her she's so great. F that, you know? So all of that, you just want to like get through this phase where everybody feels weird so things can kind of get back to normal. Take your money, do something constructive, take him up, learn some classes, and, you know, keep rocking out. That way, if it ends, there you didn't do anything wrong. You know, and no one can say anything bad about you, so you can easily move on and it doesn't turn into something. But that's just my two cents. I'll be listening for the update.
Appreciate that, Emmy. Other folks, do we have any other suggestions for our caller in Wisconsin? Would we adjust our code, how we're behaving in the workplace to try to appease, for lack of a better word, that might not be the correct term, adjust the code to try to, I'll use appease for lack of a better term for the time being, to appease race soldiers on the job, or would you just continue to operate in the same manner that you have been doing, even though a non-white person has shared information that, you know, they might, if they can't satisfy you, they might, you know, try to get rid of you, which racists do a lot of anyway. Any other folks have commentary on this one?
Hi, guys.
Stacey in the UK.
Hi. Yeah, I agree with what you and Emma just said. With just one or two caveats on some of the suggestions, but obviously ultimately it's up to the caller in Wisconsin. I would, as with everybody else, I'd be cautious. With the VPs offer, in inverted commas, of training and support, given that in the first meeting with the manager, she was asked the question, is there anything else that they could do in the next 12 months or whatever to help her enjoy a job more or want to stay? And that was used against her in the conversation with the VP. I would be cautious about asking for training that was specifically relating to her ability to do the job that she's doing now. Because I do think clearly that it's more entrapment than anything else. But what I would do is, as been suggested, think about anything else or any next level position in the role or, you know, a skill set that somebody else is, or, you know, a project that they're working on that you could perhaps develop a different, you know, a new set of skills. As has been said, just use the time that you're in that employment, however long it is, to your maximum benefit. But don't give them anything that they could turn around and use against you in terms of your performance on your role. And then just whatever you request, do not get it into your head that they're going to approve that request. If you get it, fantastic, that's a bonus, but don't expect to get it, because they're playing games. And even that, you know, offering you something and not giving it to you, if there's an element of insincerity that goes on in these organizations, I don't really mean it. I mean, they might do in your case, but, you know, more often than not, you know, I've had managers say, oh, yeah, would you like to go and do some training? And then when that request comes around, it's, for some reason, they're not going to approve it. And in the past, I've, you know, got upset about it, not necessarily in the office personally. And I've just learned to realize if you get it, you get it. If you don't, you don't. Don't let it affect you, because it's part of the terrorism. And in terms of the showcasing, I do think that is a useful tool. Don't, as has been said, don't be fake. I would steer away from asking people questions about their family or personal things for no other reason than that just opens the door for them to do the same with you. And I, you know, I would guess that you don't want to have them up in your personal business. But, you know, again, just thinking about the office environment as a learning opportunity. Are there any particular projects that you could praise them about that they're working on, just to get extra information on, you know, use it as a learning opportunity, basically. I'll pause my line there, Gus.
Context of white supremacy neutralizing workplace racism. Number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Much obliged for your commentary, Stacy, in the UK. Do we have any other folks who had a response for our caller in Wisconsin about whether or not she should make an adjustment to how she's functioning on the job?
Maddie here.
Greetings, Ivy.
Greetings, Gus. Greetings to everyone on the line. As Gus said, this is Ivy, formerly HV, to be software developer in Wisconsin. I completely agree with Gus that, and I said this before, that you are brilliant, and you seem to always be very codified, and I don't think that you should change anything. And I think that, you know, what Gus said about asking about their children and things like that, I think that you should discontinue that. I think that that seems to be a break in your code, and that it invites a lot of tackiness, a lot of tacky conversation, because even a lot of times, if you don't share, you know, your family, just even allowing them to share theirs, the fact that you'll be a listening ear, they will say a lot of, they'll throw in a lot of tacky stuff while they kind of have you in this, where they have you in this lane where it's not professional anymore. And I think that for you in particular, what it seems to me that the problem is your competency. You are so competent, and most times when Black people are competent on the job, whites resent that. Sometimes it results in promotions and things of that nature, very rarely, just for showcasing purposes. But even in those cases, it's resentment, and usually the resentment results in, you know, lack of promotion and things of that nature. And it seems that no matter what you do in terms of changing emotion or smiling or any of that, that that's not going to change anything, because it seems that they have decided that you are one competent person that they are just going to keep in a second class status or a subjugated status, just at a at a lower level than you deserve to be, that you're one of those people that it doesn't matter what you do, that they're just going to, you know, take their resentment out on you and not give you anything. So I think that's your problem, is that, you know, that you're too confident and they don't like that, and they're not gonna do right by you as a result of that. And I also wanted to comment with the person who said that he was accused. I think it was a male. I'm so sorry if it was a female, but I think it was a male who said he was accused of being too quiet. I remember you said that you do talk about things that are job related, and we pretty much keep it at that. I think what may be helpful is if you can recall possibly recent conversations, whenever you're accused of being too quiet, if you can recall recent conversations where you talked about the job or something like that, you can bring that up and you say, oh no, you know, I'm not quiet. You know, I just was talking to so-and-so about, you know, this, that, or the other, about the job and this particular thing, that we were solving, or, just this information about, you know, new information of what department may be closing down or what new technology they might be bringing in, or, you know, whatever the case may be. So just to kind of, I guess, give them examples to maybe shut that charge down. And then the last thing I wanted to say is when people were talking about different coworkers were bringing up personal things like sports and things like that to them, and, you know, don't you like sports? Who you think is going to win? Things like that. To immediately change the subject to something work-related, just maybe even practice how you can do that, what questions you can ask that may be beneficial to you, just to, you know, throw them off, and so that you don't feel like you have to entertain that conversation even for a minute, and they may completely forget about it because now, excuse me, you're talking about something totally different and immediately. So just immediately switch the conversation to something work-related. And I guess that's all I had. Thank you all for listening, and thanks for us. I'll mute my line.
Appreciate that, Ivy. Did we have other folks who had commentary on whether or not our software engineer in Wisconsin should alter her workplace code? Folks satisfied on that one for the time being. I'm just, the codification is supposed to be consistent. That doesn't mean that you always do the same thing. Certainly you make alterations and refine, racist refine, but I'm a big advocate of consistency so that you aren't having to change every day based on what racists are doing. And yeah, just, I think what you've been doing is solid thus far. I would say just continue to do what you're doing, unless, you know, you come to a determination that you need to change a few things. But I just say continue to do what you're doing. Be alert, be aware, and they will, regardless of what's going on, I'm sure they will have more mistreatment aimed for you to deal with. So just be alert, be prepared, and I guess we'll be waiting for the update for how things continue to unfold. Do we have other folks who had commentary, either your own situation or if you wanted to comment on anything that's been shared thus far?
Guys, can I say one more thing that I forgot to the software developer?
Let's hear it.
I just wanted to quickly say, I'm not sure how feasible, you know, this is for you, because the job that you have sounds like a career, but that maybe you could be thinking in the lane of getting another job, another, you know, plantation where you might have a better chance of your competency leading to a promotion, because that is the case in some cases where it will do that. So just maybe, I'm not saying, you know, just automatically jump to another job, but I'm saying just thinking in that lane, maybe looking around and just kind of considering it, because they also could be setting you up, like trying to give you this bonus and just to make, if they do fire you, to make it hurt even more, to make it like bother you even more, because they like to psychologically terrorize us like that. They've done that to people who've been working places for 30 years and all those types of things. So just, you know, thinking along those lines, because your competency certainly warrants that, and I hope that you know, get the promotion and just the compensation that you deserve. And that's all I had. I'll mute my line. Thanks, Gus. Thanks, everyone.
Appreciate that, Ivy. I did just want to say quickly, I do think that that is another tremendous source of stress for Black people, victims of white supremacy, but Black people in particular. I think that there are a lot. It's not just our caller in Wisconsin, but there are a lot of Black people who are just extraordinary scholars, geniuses, brilliant. But when you do not have an opportunity to exercise that brilliance, and or that brilliance is just exploited and used by racists, that, I mean, the frustration and stress and sadness, I think that a lot of Black people experience, that goes a long way to all of the Black mental health issues that we have, and hypertension and weight issues. I mean, just lots of the trauma that we experience, just that right there, being competent, not, you know, anything else, just being competent at great at what you do and just having that totally ignored, used, unappreciated, all of that. I think that ends up being huge and results in a lot of Black people just totally losing interest in even, you know, wanting to work, or what people have been talking about, like being on the job and use it to try to learn as much as you can. I think a lot of Black people, they just totally lose enthusiasm for wanting to learn or be curious about anything, because they just feel like it's just not going to benefit them in any way. They won't be promoted. They won't be rewarded. They won't even get a thanks for all of this. You know, it'll just be more abuse and mistreatment. I do think that's something that's, you know, significant to keep in mind. Do we have other folks who had commentary, either your own situation you wanted to discuss, or if you have comments on what's been discussed thus far, feel free.
Can I be heard?
Emmy?
Yes, sir. So maybe about 2 weeks ago, maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I just kind of kept forgetting to share with you all. So I commute. My whole life is a big commute. I'm a commuter. Unfortunately, I didn't get the wisdom of Mr. Fuller earlier, because I remember I listened not too long ago to him talking about considering the proximity of your workplace to your home, but I really don't have that luxury at the moment to move. And at one time I did, when I did work in D.C. and live in D.C., but now I school in Virginia, and now I live in Virginia, but I still commute. So everything is a commute is what I'm getting at. Anyway, so with that commute, waking up very early and then commuting back to go to work because I school, you know, just, yeah, it's a lot going on. This one time, I forgot my work clothes. So I had on the clothes that I wore to school. Now, when I realized this, I told the pharmacist, you know, I was like, I'm happy to stop at the house and grab my work clothes. But I just don't have them on me. I ran out the house and I completely forgot to grab them. And he said, you know, I didn't, you know, it wasn't like I was wearing a halter top and, you know, like I was all out in school. It wasn't like that. I looked just as fine. I just didn't have on the right colors. That's all. Instead, I just didn't have on the right colors. So he says, it's cool. Just come because I don't want you to be late, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay, fine. So I went there. And I didn't even have my lab coat. I work in a pharmacy, so I do wear a lab coat. Didn't have that because I took it home and washed it. And it was just a reason, because usually everything is in the car. Like, I pack everything. I'm very organized and prepared. I just dropped the ball on that one thing that day. Anyway, that particular day, there's another tech, but I've never met her. I started in October. At this point, it's now practically, I guess, February or March when this occurred. I'd never met her. She leaves at maybe like 5 or 5:30, and I get there at 6. So, and one time we crossed each other, but I wasn't sure if it was her, so I just minded my business. I was like, you know, it just is what it is. And she didn't speak, so I was like, okay, maybe it's not her. So I do know that she's a white female. So someone comes to the counter, and she tells me her name. Now, I'm nobody's fool, so I automatically knew it was her. But I was like, that's interesting. She doesn't introduce herself. So I just treat her like a regular customer for a second. Then when I go to ring her and get her employee numbers to get her discount or whatever, I was like, oh, you're the tech. And she was like, oh, so rude of me. I didn't introduce myself.
And I was just fascinated, like, you know, I already knew that, like, from the moment you gave me your name, like, you really, okay, that's cool. And so, but what was so interesting, so that whole thing transpired. She has two non-white girls. She might have other kids, but the girls are with her. So I was like, oh, you're one of those white females. And then you saw me all glorious with my afro doing my thing. And I'm looking how I'm looking because I'm not stuck in my ugly work clothes, whatever. But I rung her up, was completely professional with her and everything. And so I don't know if you all recall, but there is a pharmacist who calls himself Egyptian who is classified as white. Legally, he is classified as white. He functions as white. I don't get to make the rules, so I treat him like he's white. So what, you know, I had one of those, and I call these universal direct messages. You know, other people might say spirit spoke to me, that type thing, but I call them universal direct messages, like UDMs, like God just DM'd me. And I was like, he texted this girl and told her to come. Because mind you, she went to work that day. So why did she come back later to pick up a prescription when she was at work? You know what I'm saying? Like, she comes literally within an hour of when she left, in between the time that she left and I arrived, which I thought, which was fascinating. So whatever conversation they had about me, I don't know. But, you know, they correspond because the way they were talking, she was like, see, I came or something like that. And I was like, what? That's interesting. You know, that's very interesting. Since then, I told you all, my code is to be extremely involved in whatever I'm doing, especially when I work with him. That way, he leaves me alone. So if I'm changing the trash, it is a complete meditative process. So I do that. Like, and what I've noticed is, especially since then, she has stopped doing all other pharmacy technician duties. She's not scanning in the DPCs, which are the pieces of paper that you sign when you pick up a prescription. She's not changing out the trash. Like, if she did, or if a pharmacist did, it was because it was overflowing and I hadn't been there in the time to change it. She's not restocking, like, she's not doing any of that. All she is doing, from what I can tell, is filling prescriptions. She's not going through, like, I went through every drug in that pharmacy to pull for the expiration date. She didn't do any of it. Last time I started it and I left her notes where I was, and then she would go through. She hasn't done anything. So, I mean, what you gonna do? I'm gonna tell y'all what I'm gonna do. Nothing. I'm gonna keep doing my job the exact same way I've been doing it. I thought it was so fascinating. I sat at work and I said, wow, she sees me, and now all of a sudden she's just not doing anything. They only filled 80 prescriptions today. What did she do all day? Because I had a stack of other things to do that she left and didn't do. Also, interestingly enough, when she came, she wanted to talk about the Black Ethiopian pharmacist. I cut that immediately and gave him praise. I said, for me, he is absolutely fascinating, fantastic patient rapport, absolutely attentive, and a joy to work for. And because that's what they want to do. And so I've been trying to figure out how I'm going to, because they're both plotting against him. The white pharmacist is always talking negatively about him, and she even came in and tried to talk negatively about him. But I would just do everything I can on his shift to make sure that when they get in, it's not like, oh, the two niggers didn't do anything. So I stay late to work with him and all that. He's tired. I totally get it. And he's a little bit more scattered. But that he's a PhD pharmacist. He's doctor pharmacist, you know. So anyway, that was one thing. The next thing, this is not necessarily at my job, but I was going to share this, but I'll share it now, like at some other time. I went out on Saturday. So, and there's a whole thing about that. But DC had that gun protest. Now, I hadn't been in the city for a minute, so I was driving, turned on Constitution, and I didn't realize that the left and the right-hand turns have of the, you know, off of Constitution had been blocked off. So my GPS told me to make a left. I went to make a left, and this white guy stands in front of my car and stops the car. So I stopped, like, what's going on? You know what I mean? I was so oblivious. It was ridiculous. This Black police officer male, he must have been a police officer, comes to my car and is so rude, like, so mean to me. You know what I'm saying? Like, called me stupid and everything. I was like, oh, I didn't know, you know, like, I was like, yeah, I'll just turn around. He was like, oh, well, since you can't see, then why don't you reverse before I give you 5 tickets? I was like, oh my God, you know, I couldn't even believe it had happened. Took me a long time, like, to really shake it off, because it hurt, you know, not to, you know, we're not supposed to be emotional about things, but I really didn't expect that. So I was, you know, white people, yeah, but I really didn't expect that. I literally was cute, fly, everything. Like, I just made a you know, my bad. I'll just bust the UE right here and get out the way. Like, you know, I didn't think it called for all of that. But then, of course, you know, place it in the context of white supremacy. So what just happened? You know what I'm saying? The white guy is his supervisor. Now, that's not to say he's correct, but I think it was in this broadcast. Gus had mentioned it earlier, that Black people can, or non-white people, but especially Black people, will do whatever to seek the approval or to get in good with whites. And I really, like, that's another universal direct message that I got. Like, that's what occurred. I was the one that caught that, you know, that caught all of that heat, because his supervisor was there, or someone he works with that's white. And so he put on that show, and I guess, you know, he got his accolades. But I dealt with that, and I really did feel that. I'll be much better prepared, but it caught me off guard because I wasn't even at work. I was just about to have a good time. So, and the last thing I wanted to tell you is there's an organization that I volunteer for, and one of the students, I helped her write her speech for the protest. I don't agree with the protest, but I support young people doing more than just sitting at home playing video games, trying to get their hands on weed. So she wanted to speak. I'm going to help her do the best thing. And I encourage her to say what she wanted to say and not be, because white people, like, you could tell they had stuck their agenda into her speech and whatnot. But anyway, so I went back. They asked me to speak about the importance of studying. And then we got off topic into math and science or whatever. But there is a non-white Asian male there who I consider a spy. I've had to consider what to do about this spy, because I feel like he's the, you know, adopted son of the people who actually fund and support this organization. And they're white, of course. And they came and showed out at the Black Panther talk back and whatnot, wearing their dashikis. And I made sure to get intel on them. So I know he's a spy and he's spying on me. So how do I deal with this suspected non-white spy? How I choose to deal with the suspected non-white spy is to treat him just with politeness and to still say whatever it is that I came to say to the non-white students. I feel that I listened enough to Dr. Welsing, Mr. Fuller, Gus, that I can trust myself to be articulate enough to express what needs to be expressed. But those are very limited times that I have to speak with the young people. So if I don't do it, it might not occur. So being able to do that is very important. So he went to hug me. I thought about it, and I gave him a little side thing. He's non-white. He don't know, and hopefully some of this non-white melanin goodness will rub off, and he'll not be as white identified. But that did occur. So I just wanted to share with you all some of the things that happened to me or that I dealt with. So thank you all for listening.
Wowee. I guess first, I'm sorry you had to deal with the rudeness from the Black enforcement official. That is unfortunate. I'm sorry that had to go down. That is heavily encouraged in the system of white supremacy. And unfortunately, there's a lot of literature where Black people have written about how oftentimes Black enforcement officials have to be especially nasty and abusive to other Black people, just as I talked about earlier, just to, you know, show their white higher ups, armed white higher ups, that, you know, yes, I can be nasty and ugly and brutish to the niggers too. That being said, system of racism, white supremacy, you know, that sort of thing does happen. And I mean, hey, we are victims, we are humans. So that is something to be emotional about. I probably would have been a little shaken up, you know, on that one as well. But understanding why those sorts of things happen, I think, is important in the system as well. We had another illustration of Black self-respect, looking out for the Ethiopian coworker to have just praise and admiration for his work and working late to help out and not. We've talked about that before. If whites are talking bad about another black person on your job or another non-white person, to not fall into that. And, oh, yeah, I can't stand such and such either. And that sort of, do not participate in that sort of thing. They're probably doing the same thing about you when you're not present. But that's like, oh, even better if you can. Oh, I've had a great experience with such and such. And they've always been nothing but professional and competent. And it's just always a joy. Outstanding. Probably inside, they're probably calling both you and the other non-white person, both Negras, the whole time. But that is brilliant. Always love hearing that. Appreciate the codification about how you're going to deal with this person who you said you think they're able to function as a racist. They're classified as white, and adjusting your code appropriately to how you're going to function with them on the job, as well as how you navigate with the, I reckon, spy on the job, because it's probably going to be a lot of that as well, where you have individuals who are being used by racist men and racist women to mistreat, harm other non-white people on the job. Kudos for black self-respect. Do we have any folks that we missed completely who had a hand-up commentary that they wanted to share? Any folks that we missed completely? Anybody with a hand up that we've not heard?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes, may I proceed?
Yes, sir.
Yes, can I be heard clearly?
Yes, sir, we can hear you.
Oh, okay, yes, this is a greeting to the host and to the listeners. This is Lamine from Kansas City, and I am going to share, I guess, some insights and maybe hopefully help some victims. This week has been long. It's been a long few weeks. And I've made a couple observations, a couple experiences. I would like to first say I've been listening to some recordings of Dr. Welting and been given a lot of while on the job. And that has assisted me greatly whenever I have to go into stores and deal with white people purchasing, because I'm a contractor. Contractors and their purchase, the people you buy from the stores aren't necessarily known for their kindness. So helping to stay on code, I haven't listened to Dr. Welting in a few months now, so that's helped me. I would say, too, another observation I've made of white people, I believe Dr. Kanban in one of his lectures, one of his interviews, he did make the statement that white people are trying to kill you. And I really think as black people, specifically black males, non-white black males, to keep that in mind, and that should flavor our interactions. I have been getting a lot of looks from white people. I'm not really sure what's happening besides the system of racism, white supremacy, but I've been getting some scowls, you know, more than the normal scowls. Black male with locked hair doesn't necessarily get the highest marks from white people, but I've been getting some scowls from white men, and it's been keeping me physically in a very defensive mood. But I do think if we just keep in mind that if they could, they'd put us back in chains, physical chains, and cut our castrators just as fast. I do believe sincerely white people want to kill us. I do have an experience I like to share with listeners regarding a new client of mine. So I received a phone call a couple weeks ago for a repair job, some custom carpentry work in a part of the town by the name of Overland Park, which there are some pretty affluent people who live in this part of town. It's supposedly one of the wealthiest zip codes in the country that are in this area. So I don't know who I'm going to meet. I don't know what kind of house I'm going to go to. You know, I Google the houses before when I get the address just to know the area. So I get a call for this work, and I go out to meet this person. I don't know who I'm going to meet. I've had bad experiences with people, so-called Indian. So I don't do work for them anymore, and I don't do work for people classified as so-called Asians. I don't do work. I just turn down the work. I don't. I found that for me, it's just it's just less headache if I just go about my business and find more work. So I didn't know who this person was, and they were texting me, and I didn't talk to them on the phone. We were texting, and so I went to their house on a Sunday, and I kind of got turned around a little bit, and they wanted some work done immediately. So I get to the house, and I go into the neighborhood, and I notice these are some extraordinarily large houses. Later, I find out these, like, start at $750, so $700, $750,000. This particular home, I had to check it out for myself later, was a $1.3 million home. And I normally don't do work in homes that are on that side of the high end. That's bigger money than I normally do work in. So I go to the house, and I'm expecting, a white person. I talked to this person on the phone once to get directions, to clarify directions. And I thought there were a white person, a person who classifies themselves as white. And little do I know, when I pull up to the house, this four-car garage home, it's a black male. And so I was taken aback and almost in a state of shock for the first 4 or 5 minutes, because I was just kind of shocked, right? And so immediately, this is very stereotypical, but I guess I'm trying to figure, get my reins here. And he, get my bearings, rather. And so he, comes out to meet me, and I see him, and it's just him, and the house is brand new. He's still they're still doing lawn work on it. And he comes out, and he introduced himself, and he's, kind of taller. So I was, thinking maybe he's a ball player. I don't know any ball players. I don't know where they live, so I think maybe he could be a ball player. But then after hearing him talk, I was like, no, he sounds like he's way too educated, or even maybe he's an IT professional or something. So I go in the house, and he tells me what he wants to do, and I say, let's do it. And he says, yes, let's do the work. And so I end up, doing the work. And his wife was asleep. So I was thinking to myself, like, okay, I'm just hoping this is a black family. I hope this is an all-black family. I hope there's not a white woman in the situation. I really do. I was in the back of my mind, there was like this little, please let there be a black woman come down the stairs, and everything will be all right. I'll be just fine. So I go to the store and come back when I bring the materials. He's like, yeah, my wife's finally up. His wife comes out. He's like, yeah, Ann, here, come here. I want you to meet this this guy, really cool guy. And it's a white woman. Her name is Ann. I was kind of heartbroken. And then why? That the question is like, why would I be hurt that there's a white woman? But I think it's, subconsciously, besides the fact she's a white woman, and I see her as I feel oppositional, but it's just like this, anyway, I'm not putting the brother down. I just felt for the brother. So the situation got worse. There were people who were coming over to the house. That's why he wanted this custom carpentry work done. He was about to host some guests. A few of them were coming in that day. There was a white male who came in, maybe in his 50s, and a white female, maybe his daughter. I'm thinking it was his daughter. She was maybe 17, 18, maybe. And they come in, and they're like, hey, hi, and everybody's just screaming, and everybody's wearing polo shirts. And I'm just in the shadows trying to do my work. And they turn and see me, and it's like, they're like, who the hell is this nigga here? Like, what is, he don't look like he belongs in this scenario. Like, and so I guess, the owner kind of allays their fears and says, oh, he's doing some work for us. He's doing some work. And they go about it. I immediately am on guard because there's two white women. I've had really bad fortune or whatever you call it with white women doing business. So I try to keep away from them at all costs when I'm trying to do business. Side note, I've been listening to a book called The Teachings of Fatah Hotep, and it talks about, it's been really helping me out, keep codified on the while I'm working. And it does talk about staying away from the women in the house, because that's not, it's not good for business in any situation, white, non-white. So, okay, he's sitting down laughing with them, and I notice his voice changes. And I mean, I guess all of us non-white, especially black males, our voice do change when we talk. But I noticed it was very different. It wasn't like he was straight gangster when he was talking with me, but the timbre of his voice did change. And he was laughing. His laugh when he was sitting with the white people was like, yeah, 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 yeah. And this scared me almost. And I was thinking to myself, like, what's going on? Now, I've never seen the movie Get Out. I know a little bit about what it's about, but I'm thinking, hey, this brother might be crying for help on the inside, and he's trapped in the situation where he lives in a multi-million-dollar home with this white woman, and he's got to enjoy this life. Now, I don't know. Maybe he does enjoy it. I don't know, really. So to make situations even worse, I was thinking, okay, good, you know, whatever. He's married to a white woman. You know, brother, I hope he stays safe. Hopefully there's no offspring. Well, I thought about that way too soon, because less than 5 minutes later, offspring one came down the stairs, offspring two came down the stairs, and offspring number three came down the stairs. All male, non-white, but clearly they look like there's been some, they have heavy white influence from their mother. I'm not harping on the situation or making light of it. I do feel that this, it was a lesson to me about what's going on, or, you know, like what, I don't know. I don't know. I later find out he's the chief executive officer of a company, IT company. The man's extremely intelligent. You know, and we later talked about some ideas about Africa, and, I have to be very careful because I listen to Fela Kuti. Sometimes I'll play my music and I'll be listening to recordings, Dr. Khalid Muhammad. And I had to make sure none of my stuff got on speaker, because just 1 minute of that would have likely got me thrown out of the house. Some of the things that Dr. Khalid Muhammad says, are not white positive. So, but I do think that it was very strange for me to see that situation. And I try to observe and learn as much about the interactions between that tragic arrangement as possible. The man had been throwing money at me, which I don't know if it has anything to do with his wife being comfortable with me working in the house alone sometimes and doing work there. But he's been giving me a lot of work recently, and like whatever I say, whatever price he pays, I'm not really sure what that's about. Maybe he likes me or not, but there could be influence. I do realize that he's not necessarily in control. He is a victim of racism as well. But I've been trying to make as much observations as I can to help me learn from the situation, since I'm not around so-called interracial couples very often. My second, and I'll be very brief with this one, reflection that I've had this past week, workplace related, was I've been also doing work for another non-white black family, which is they're kind of close to my home, and it's been very happy. I would encourage non-white victims of race and white supremacy to look for black clients if all possible, because it's been like a breath of fresh air for me to work with black people. I know not all black people are kind and positive, but when we have a positive experience, we should magnify that in our minds. And I've been having a really positive experience with this non-white black family, and doing a bathroom remodel. And I've been trying to give them extra attention, and I've even thrown in a little extra here and there to make the experience good for both people. And it's been a joy, and it's brought me a lot of joy to my heart to be able to bring that. And so I would recommend, if you have the opportunity to serve non-white black people, even if you're like at a bank and you can pick somebody, I mean, please do all possible to help other victims of white supremacy. My personal codification is, you know, I will reject doing business with white people or even non-white people if I don't feel good with them, because our work interactions affects us so. It's such a big impact on our lives, just our interactions we have when we work with people. So we might as well take our time and try to be selective, if at all possible, as victims, to have the best experience at work possible. Thank you for allowing me to share, and I will take my call offline.
Appreciate the detail. Always, always grateful when we can have black entrepreneurs, as they call it, dial in and talk about their experience. I've said before, I hear people erroneously, in my opinion, talk as though the problem with regards to white supremacy on the job will be solved if we just get black people to go in business for themselves. I've said for years that nothing could be further from the truth. If you are working for yourself, it will just alter the way that you deal with racists. The codification that you developed in terms of what you just shared, if you don't have a good relationship, I think you said Indians, period, you just turned down because the anti-blackness and your experience has just not been constructive, so you just turned that down. You certainly have more leverage where you can do things like that to try to minimize the likelihood of having some sort of terroristic experience. I think with the music aspect, I would probably have to do headphones or something externally. That just seems like a situation where I would have a slip at some point where I'd be playing something and they would walk in or a child would run in or something. I probably would just have my headphones and leave it at that. I think great codification in terms of being cautious, but especially with that situation, tragic arrangement, to be very cautious. Great observations about the change in behavior. I know Allison Manswell, she wrote the book Listen In about racism in the workplace, where she said that that's, you know, almost what she tells black males to not be loud. Don't be abrasive. We talked about that before. I talked about at the beginning of the program, being the entertainment committee. We had the caller who wrote in about that and everything. Black male laughing, telling jokes. Whites are happy. Whites are fine. Being serious, talking about serious things, not talking at all. Whites are not happy. It seems at least many of us have that understanding of racism, white supremacy at some level. Maybe we might be a little bit safer if we can, you know, crack a smile, tell a joke or two. Anybody we missed completely? Have a hand up that we have not heard from at all? Did we miss anyone completely? We got everybody? Nobody we missed completely that had a hand up? Grand. Anybody else have comments that they wanted to get in, thoughts they wanted to share?
I got
Stacy in the UK.
Hi. Yeah, last week I didn't listen to, I dialed in late, so I didn't hear the beginning of the program. But there was a conversation around emails. And I think it was somebody who had been told by their manager to stop emailing or whatever. And then the week before, you asked me about the physical attacks that I had experienced in my job because somebody else had shared about their blackmail pushing past them. And I gave the example of blackmail that I had been working with who had been harassing me in the workplace, and I ended up having to report that to HR and to the police. And just in terms of I got reminded of another incident related to both the emails and that particular mail. Now, the program that I worked on at the time was basically regenerating an area, and by that just meaning sort of physical and economic redevelopment of the area. So it covered a lots of issues, including housing, employment, community aspects, etc. And I led on sort of program relating to getting people into work, enterprise, that sort of activity. And the black male, he led on sort of community aspects, and the particular program as well, it had been focused on involving local people as much as possible, allegedly, in the delivery of that program, and, you know, shaping what their area should look like in the future. And there were two females who ran a childcare project, and so they had wanted funding for that particular project. And this black male obviously knew them personally, and as I'd mentioned 2 weeks ago, he was being undermined by managers, so he was just lashing out in lots of different directions. And he had a go at me
I don't remember if it was specifically to do with that project or those two females projects, but you know, it's starting to tell me it was his jurisdiction and all kinds of things, as if, you know, he was running the program, which was clearly not the case for either of us. But anyway, these two females, they put in a proposal for funding. I spent a lot of time giving them detailed feedback so that they could get it into a shape where, you know, it was likely to be approved. And I then got called in to the director, who told me that they had complained about me, that I was not helping them, that I'd blocked them from getting funding, blah, 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 blah. And I knew that this blackmail had obviously encouraged them to do so. And I was absolutely stunned. And at that time, I had an Asian male who was reporting to me. He was supporting me on that particular program. And the two of us were just like puzzled. I mean, he wasn't in the meeting at the time, but when I fed back to him, he was just like stunned because I couldn't believe it. Anyway, so what I did do after the meeting with the director, I had forwarded him my correspondence, and I had given them detailed feedback on how they could improve their proposal. And, you know, my aim was always to help them get the funding and give them support so it could be at a level that would, as I said, likely get approved. So with that in mind, he then called me back into the office and said, oh, right, okay, well, he'd met with them again, and he'd showed them my feedback and the copies of the proposal feedback that I'd given them. So obviously, their little argument, their little plan didn't get very far. And I could only imagine they were completely embarrassed because obviously they were lying. And then my director had called me back, as I said, into that meeting. And he then said to me, oh, I mean, you do spend a lot of time documenting things electronically. I don't think you should be doing that. And that was the first time that I realised that, I don't think he was involved in the initial scheme. He could have been, I don't know. But why would you have a problem with me having feedback electronically that I'd given to these people who came in and blatantly lied? Why would it be a problem that I could prove that I was doing my job? Why would you even need to give me that feedback? So again, I would just, for people, make sure that you have, so people listening in, just make sure that you are in a position to be able to document your work that you do. If anybody ever tells you not to email, ignore, absolutely ignore. But I meet my line there, Gus.
Wow, that is important, because that did come up just earlier, just a few days back, in terms of a black person in a workplace capacity being told that they maybe shouldn't document or email important things that are happening on the job. But that portion about the black male who had mistreated you before, and him being there and him being mistreated by whites, and him apparently lashing out or taking out his frustrations on other victims of white supremacy, that is very common all over the world for black people who are being used by racists. They get upset, they take it out on other victims of white supremacy. That's, you know, how the system is designed for things to play out. That whole little tacky scenario of you being falsely accused of not, I guess, helping with the project or whatever it is, just again documenting none of our memories is, you know, as grand as we like to think. Document, even in face of opposition, document. In fact, if you're being told, I've never even heard that in a workplace capacity, that you're spending a little bit too much time documenting, don't take so many notes. I've never heard that in a workplace setting. If you are hearing that sort of thing, that might be a clue that you need to be doing more note-taking in the workplace. Just make sure that you're not missing anything and getting, you know, pertinent details. Did we miss anybody? Anybody have a thought, comment they need to get in? We have kind of last few moments, about 5 minutes before we conclude. Any final comments folks want to make sure they get in before we wrap things up?
I had a question, Gus.
Question from Ivy.
Yes, I had a question for the software developer. She's still on the line. I think it's great code that she doesn't show emotion, and I'm a naturally emotional person, and I don't like that, and I want to improve that, and I wanted to know how she's able to do that. Is that something that a person has to be kind of naturally non-emotional to implement, or, you know, if she just has any tips on just how she accomplishes that?
Oh, so I am a very emotional person. I get angry very quickly. One thing that I do, though, is I practice. I practice in front of a mirror, or I run through scenarios in my head. If I know I'm going to be in a meeting or a place with a lot of people, I run through scenarios in my head. How will I respond? For example, when I was going to find out about this promotion the first time, I ran some scenarios in my head. I said, okay, this is how I'll respond if I do get the promotion, and this is how I'll respond if I don't get the promotion. And I'll just do the same. I'll get it to the point where I do the same thing no matter what happens. So I think it's just a matter of practicing. I think a lot of things don't come naturally, period. We just have to just sort of practice, and practice makes perfect. I'm not always unemotional. I mean, there are times when I will just do, well, I'll just forget the code and respond to something in a certain way, where you can clearly tell that you've irritated me. But the goal is to make those times of not being codified fewer and far between, or further between, excuse me, so that you know, just practicing over and over again, so it becomes commonplace. And I just wanted to say thank you to everybody who responded. It was very helpful. I learned a lot, and I'll listen to the archives again so I can really absorb what you said. Thank you. I'll mute my line.
Great tips. Thank you.
Thanks for those massage balls. Best thing ever. Anybody else have any quick commentary they needed to get in before we wrap up, that you can be concise? Anything else folks want to get in? Comment, question, gripe?
Gus, just to say, I'm also a yoga convert, and I would recommend including to Ivy as a way of managing your emotions. But yes, I'm a yoga convert. Thank you for that.
Yoga is awesome. So many benefits. I haven't even studied it enough to know all of the wonderful benefits that you get from the practice, but it is extraordinary. And I did practice today, 6:30 a.m. I was in class. And yeah, I think it can help you they do so much with breathing. I hadn't even associated that with emotional control of emotions, but absolutely, they do so much with breathing. I say that all the time. Breathe, breathe. When you feel that you're getting anxious, upset, nervous, angry, deeper breath. They have lots, tons and tons of breathing exercises that you do, where you can just practice. You can breathe and you can say a little chant to yourself. You can say Dr. Welsing's name. I know some people do that, to just things that make you calm. If it's thinking of, you know, specific people that you care about, to just calm you down so that you can think, be logical. Yoga, huge, huge, huge fan. It can do lots, wonders. Anything else folks need to get in?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Oh, yes. Thanks. Thanks very much, Gus. I just wanted to also share a quick incident where I think there's been a lot of what people call the Black Moors. They also been coming into the courthouse, like citing a lot of statutes, and like one of the white women, she was summoned across the hallway, and a lot of people were in the office very nervous, and the black female, she reported to me that she was on the counter and the white woman was getting upset that the black male was reciting a lot of the laws. And in her own words, she was close to calling him a nigger. So I guess her face was turning red. So this happened a couple of weeks ago, and that was just the only report I wanted to share.
Wow. White people getting that also is great when you can see whites getting emotional. I've seen that as well. When black people start being a bit more codified, a bit more logical in their approach, precise, being informed about the laws, that sort of thing. I've seen where whites start to be the ones who are having a difficult time managing their emotions. With that, I did want to make sure I also got in as well that piece about being timely, punctual, as they say. Really important. Reminded me, it was a listener who was talking about that and just saying that she had an early morning job, and she was saying that she had just made it a part of her code to be there 20 to 30 minutes late. And she said that, of course, whites noted that and made some sort of comment like, oh, man, I noticed I used to be the first person to get here. Now you're always here before I get here. Like they were kind of low key upset about that. But they will take notice of that. And that can be the sort of thing that can be brought up when you have a performance review or anything, just that. Wow. I mean, talk about being on time. I see you here early every day, that can work in your favor, and just making that a part of your code so that you are never late. Your code is that you are always 25 minutes early. That way, if something should happen and you end up being late, that just means that you'll be 5 minutes early to work as opposed to being actually late. With that, we should be here tomorrow. Since yoga was mentioned, we should have guests on the program this coming Tuesday to talk about racism, white supremacy, and yoga. Coming this Tuesday. Stay tuned. But we'll be here before that. We'll be here tomorrow. The Hate U Give. Man, that is a rancid text, but I expected it to be so. We had cowbells mentioned on the program today. Rancid text. I expected it to be so. This is really more study in every sense of the word. Just keeping in mind that millions of children, black children across the U.S., probably the world, Stacey talked about it last week. Millions of black children specifically around the world are being told that this is a spectacular book, the book of the Black Lives Matter generation, in fact. It's rancid. Tomorrow, I think it's our fourth study session. Angie Thomas, The Hate U Give. Looking forward. Compensatory call-in will be here this Saturday as well, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. We'll catch up on what has gone down over the last 7 days. Huge thanks to all the folks who dialed in. I hope it was a constructive investment of your Thursday evening. At minimum, remain codified on the job. I hope this has been of some help for folks who are dealing with white terrorism in various capacities wherever you work around the world. That said, creator, we ask, sobriety would be best. Super important. Make sure we get that in. Sobriety. Dr. Welsing certainly would co-sign. I think Dr. Kanban was mentioned. I know he would co-sign. Many of the black people that we esteem would strongly recommend that we do everything we can to preserve black mental health. All of that stress and trauma from the job, going home and getting cigarettes or alcohol. They talked about black people being a new rising group with regards to opioid addiction. None of those poisons is going to help us manage the trauma of white supremacy racism. If anything, it will probably cause us more problems. Let's do everything we can to preserve our brain computer so that we can think of new concepts, solutions to the problem, racist man, racist woman, racist child, and certainly buckle up every time you're in a vehicle, driver, or passenger. Let's do everything we can to minimize contact with race soldiers, badge or no. That said, creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of Black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another Black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, your brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
Man, I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Even my conditioning has been conditioned.